Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am once again here with Dom. Dom, we are back for another season of Survivor. Are you excited?
Who are you and why are you on my podcast?
It has been a little while. This might actually be the longest we have gone without doing a podcast together. It's been well over a month since we've done a podcast with the two of us. We've done plenty of stuff where one of us will be talking to someone else, but you and me, buddy, just sitting down, talking through some reality TV, it has been a little while, although I am, to answer my own question myself, very thrilled to be back here to be diving into another season of Survivor. Big Brother 19 just ended a little less than 24 hours ago at the time that we're recording this. And as glorious as that ending was, I was very ready for that to be done and to just mentally start moving on to other things.
Although we will have some hot takes on that, and I think we will try to get something together on that. So our Big Brother 19 coverage will consist of that one episode like 3 months ago and this, and that's going to be the sum total of the attention we pay to it. But yeah, this I think it's definitely been the longest stretch of podcasts that we've released without both of us being there. We're experimenting with other people, you know, we're letting other people into the relationship. But I think we're coming back to what made it work originally.
Yeah, no, and not only that, Dom, we're not only coming back for this Survivor Heroes, Healers, Hustlers season during the off season. I'm sure plenty of people who are hearing this may not have heard about this. I'm sure, you know, a lot of people are smart and don't care about Big Brother and haven't been paying attention to anything we've been doing all summer. We actually just started a Patreon. So for people who would be potentially interested in that, what we are doing is every week going to be going through. We've already started on Big Brother 7 and over the last month or so had to pause on that for a little bit, but that's going to be coming back into the light very soon, where we are going to be going through every week in bonus episodes, old seasons of reality TV. We're currently starting with BB7, BB All-Stars, I think a season that both of us would consider one of the best in the history of like American reality TV, to say the very least, and certainly up there with all the seasons of The Genius for me as well. And that has been a lot of fun so far. Very excited to get back into that. And afterwards, for all the people who are subscribed, that's going to be determining the seasons that we talk about next. So if you would be interested in another episode pretty much every single week, I think we're going to be doing, you can go to patreon.com/Dom and Colin, and you can find out plenty more about that. Definitely very excited to get back going on all of that and to have a lot more coming in that on that front and in the very near future.
Yeah, we took a break from BB7 just before one of the most iconic moments of the season, so I'm very excited to dive back into that again when we have the time.
Well, quick behind-the-scenes glimpse, we didn't even take a break. We actually did about probably 85% of that next week 3 podcast, but then it was the same day we were recording some other podcast with someone else, so we had to like pause the ending, and then Dom got sick, and then like I got sick, and then now just so much time has passed that we're just going to do the whole thing over again. Because there were like, at that point, we were making references to like Cody and Jessica in the BB19. You know, like it was all a distant memory at this point. But certainly very excited to get into. I agree. One of the most fun weeks of any season of Big Brother. And for the record, the Big Brother 7 stuff is all going to be entirely free all season. For you know, to get the people a taste of what they're going to be in for, if they do want to go ahead and sign up for the Patreon page again. In case it was a little fast last time, patreon.com/Dom and Colin. All right, Dom, let's get into Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. First of all, before we dive into this cast, I think it is worth putting the disclaimer out there that with only, you know, at this point, less than a week before the premiere, there has been so much. There has been so much comprehensive coverage about all of these people. I can't imagine that there are too many people listening to us right now that haven't listened to or read about these people in some other capacity. So as usual, we're going to be super lazy and assume that you already know a bit about these people, and we're going to be looking less at them and like their backgrounds, because you can go and check out First One Out with Josh Wigler if you want something like that. We could never come close to anything like that. We're going to be just looking more today at like their prospects within the game, I think.
Yeah, I started looking over all the preseason stuff this time yesterday. I just let it slip by for some reason and never really got around to consuming it. And there was a literal day worth of coverage that I had to catch up on. So I'm still working my way through all of that. Certainly will not be finished by the time the premiere actually starts, but we will hope to clear all that backlog sometime in the next few weeks.
Right. I tweeted this out, and I was it's not a joke in the sense that it is probably going to be a true fact, but I don't mean this, I think it's a good thing, but on RHAP alone, there's going to be more preseason coverage, like in terms of total runtime, than the entire season of Heroes versus Hustlers versus Healers, whichever one I haven't said yet, is going to run on CBS. Like, it is, it's amazing over these last couple of seasons just how much the preseason coverage has expanded. I think it started in Cambodia with everyone really diving deep into that, and ever since then, it seems like all of the preseason, like just the stakes have been raised when it comes to covering preseasons of Survivor. It seems like it's a whole different ballgame than it ever was, even as recently as a couple of years ago. But Dom, before we dive into all of these people, and I'm very excited to do it, I think we got a very fun cast on our hands. But quickly, we are back in Fiji for this season, and we have recently heard news that it sounds like we might be in Fiji for a while, if not indefinitely. I don't even remember. I wish I could remember who to credit for reporting this, or whom to credit for reporting this. But I assume you heard this news that Survivor's going to stay in Fiji for a while. Do you have any strong takes on that?
Yeah, I did. I think at this point, regardless of what you think about the merits of it, that battle is already lost. So even if they end up going through a few different locations, it's going to be not necessarily the same type of place, but it's not going to be easily distinguished from just watching the show. I don't think you're going to have a strong sense of where they are or what that means in terms of the location. So, you know, we are not going to get another China, right, where you have this kind of iconography built into everything about the season. We're not going to get another Guatemala where they're literally just there in the middle of these Mayan ruins, and that sets the backdrop for everything that's going on. I think it's going to be something like Cambodia, where you see that amazing shot of them walking through the temples at Angkor Wat in the opening shot of the premiere, and then you never hear anything remotely Cambodian ever again, right? You see them maybe go to a local village for something for a reward, or in one of the challenges, they find a way to work these cultural references in. But in terms of like what you notice when you watch the show, it's just going to be Survivor. It's going to be this good cinematography, these great shots. You're going to have these like the usual like beaches and water challenges and everything. And you're not going to get a sense of where they are or why you should care where they are. And I think that's going to be the case going forward. And I think it has been the case for a long time.
Yeah, that's the thing is, it seems like it's been many seasons now, and whether we're in Samoa or the Philippines or Cambodia or wherever, we are essentially just hopping from gorgeous island to gorgeous island, and frankly, I've never really been able to tell much of a difference from place to place. Like, long gone, I think, like you were saying, are the days of going to China or Guatemala, where the location is going to be a major part of just the visual element to every single episode. But I'm personally, as I've said for years at this point, it feels like on the podcast, totally fine with that. I, frankly, for me, I am all about whatever is making it as easy as possible for production to be able to keep doing these seasons and know that it's going to go as smoothly as it can for them. I think that is by far the most important thing to me as far as the location is concerned.
Yeah, and one criticism that you do sometimes hear is that Survivor treats these locations in a very instrumental way. So you think back to the two cycles that we've had now in Nicaragua. So you had the season that was called Nicaragua, Redemption Island, and then San Juan del Sur later on. And what could you really tell about the location? Like, let's say you didn't know it was in Nicaragua. Okay, you get some of the backdrop, you get some of the stories told in rewards and so on. They get to go to local villages and see how the people there live, even though they get a very kind of selective view of that. But what do you actually know about the place? Like, it's kind of using the location to dress up the same fundamental concept, but the unique things about that place never really factor into the equation at all. So maybe it's actually for the better that they're not even bothering to pretend with that stuff anymore. And it is just, okay, we're in some like vaguely exotic tropical paradise, and this is where the game actually takes place.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think that's totally fine, at least for me. I think one thing, though, that does slightly matter. Like, we talk about how not only the location, at least for us, is not going to be a big difference maker, but the prevailing narrative when it comes to the themes of the seasons now is it doesn't really matter. And I think that's for a good reason, which is because it doesn't really matter. The theme is pretty much moot as soon as we hit like episode 3 or 4. And the season is going to be the season regardless of what the theme was in the first place. But I do think, Dom, that it matters how the themes sound. Like, I don't think it matters how they split the people up, but I do think there is tangible value or hindrance in these dumb-sounding season names. Like, I know that this was an early criticism of San Juan del Sur and Millennials versus Gen X, and obviously both of those turned out to be, I think San Juan del Sur was a very good season. Millennials versus Gen X, very near the top of my list all time. And I don't think the fact that this is called Heroes, Healers, Hustlers is going to put a ceiling on how good this season could be. But I do think it's a dumb name, and I do feel like that kind of matters. Like, it kind of matters that they're naming these after they make them sound like ice cream flavors at this point.
Oh, it's incredibly dumb, and I don't think there's anybody out there watching, whether it's hardcore fans or casuals, who doesn't agree that it's incredibly dumb, and that's what really gets me about it. Like, I can kind of... So, I'm willing to make these compromises that, okay, we have to attract a wider audience, and sometimes that means taking the show in a direction that I might not agree with. I don't know who is asking for this. I don't know who hears this title and thinks, wait, that's actually a pretty good concept. Like, no one is on board with this, and I don't know if Jeff buys into his own bullshit. So I don't know if he's taking like the Lyndon Johnson strategy of convince yourself of what you're selling so that you can then sell it to other people. Because maybe he is such a good advertiser, such a good salesman, that he has convinced me that he actually believes this himself. And he's not just, this isn't just a shameless grifting on behalf of CBS.
Well, okay, in general, I think that's a great way of putting it. And I remember you used the Lyndon Johnson comparison when we were talking about Derek Levasseur during BB16. I totally buy, just in general, that Jeff is being sincere. Like, he is actually amped up about these things. Like, look no further. We had a great discussion about this with Cochran when we interviewed him after South Pacific. Look no further than JeffProbst.com, at least how it used to be. Like, all of Jeff, he really does seem to be that guy, like that Andrew Savage kind of guy, like in real life, who is genuinely fascinated by all of the exploration that he gets to do as host of Survivor.
Yeah, and listening to him talk about it with Josh Wigler and in other places too, it sounds like he believes it. And listening to him, you would think it's the most natural tribe division in the world, and like, and you're surprised they never thought of this sooner. Like, what took you so long, really?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing is, I'm willing to listen to people who say, oh, the theme Millennials versus Gen X, even though it's a mouthful, got people to tune in on the grounds of like, hey, I'm a Gen Xer, I'd like to see how this battle plays out, or I'm a Millennial, I'd like to watch us own some Gen Xers or whatever. I don't understand how they think Heroes, Healers, Hustlers is going to get one extra viewer. I also don't think it's going to lose one extra viewer, but that's where I go back to. It just sounds so dumb. Why are we doing this?
And the contrast with Heroes versus Villains is so obvious and so unflattering at the same time. Like, everyone is familiar with that Heroes versus Villains idea, and that's what sparks these debates about what actually constitutes a hero or a villain, both in life and in the context of Survivor. No one even thinks in terms of, oh, I'm a healer, I'm a hustler. And it's interesting to me that Jeff said they were sold on the theme once they got this healer, like, bridge between the other two idea, so like Heroes versus Hustlers, because that's very reminiscent of like a HPV style thing, right? Like, that's just a rebranding of the same idea, but you add this third wedge to it and it suddenly just doesn't even make coherent sense anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean, you are right. He said once they landed on the word healers, like, finally the big alliteration theme of the season came into focus and everything was solved. But that, I mean, I can't help but go back to the same point that we've been making all the time about these themes, that everyone makes about the themes, which is they don't matter. And I just don't know why we insist on doing this. I know I'm not alone in feeling this way, but I feel like I wish Survivor would go to like the way the Super Bowl does it, where it's just Super Bowl 51, Super Bowl 52, whatever. I think Survivor would not lose one person if on season 40 they just start calling it Survivor 40, Survivor 41, whatever. Like stay in Fiji forever, just switch to numbers. These themes are not helpful.
And keep in mind, the worst is yet to come. Okay,
right. That's what I'm saying. This is the first one that we're finally planting our flag down here in Fiji. This is where we're starting, and we've still got hopefully many, many more of these to go.
And do you think they just have some like list of all the possible names that they've considered and rejected over the years, and they're now just dredging up out of nowhere again, so they have something to call the season? Like it's in 5 years' time, how far down this list are we going to be?
Right. Well, I mean, the other thing that they said is like they had the cast and then landed on, I believe, had the cast and then landed on the season theme from there once they got that concept of healers. I think we should just issue, rather than going through this with pretty much every single person on the cast about, oh, what makes them a hero versus what makes them a healer?
Nothing.
What makes them that is that's where production, that's the group that they thought production would, that production thought they would be interesting with. It's not going to matter at all. They're not going to be out there feeling like, I think the same way that to use heroes and villains as like an extreme example, but I do think when you split people, like for instance, white collar, blue collar, and no collar, there will potentially be some sense of like, or Brains Beauty, Brawn, another good example of the classic example of this, of like, oh, we're the Brawn tribe. This is what we're about. This is the way we play the game versus we're the brains. I can't imagine that narrative is going to be among the players factoring into things at all. I think the smart people, like the Zeke Smiths of this cast, will be framing everything in those terms to whore for airtime. But I don't think it'll actually make a difference at all in the way the game is actually playing out.
I don't know if I agree with that, because I think that would be true of the Healers tribe, which, as you mentioned, has no reason to really exist. But as for heroes and hustlers, I think you will get people who think, I'm a hustler, and so if I'm on the bottom of my tribe, if I'm in a bad spot in the game, I need to really put the work in and be aggressive and trying to get myself out of that spot in a way that maybe they wouldn't be naturally. And I think that labeling effect that we've spoken about so often before could come into play there. Now, heroes, you struggle to see how that's going to play into that. For the healers, it won't matter at all. And I wonder actually if that's going to be almost a blessing for them, that they don't feel the need to be anchored to this idea of who they are and how they should behave.
Right. I'm sure any super fans, like Rourke shows up on the healers tribe and she's like, okay, I'm on no collar, I'm on the beauty tribe, like we're the third team that got added in because they wanted more people. Yeah. Dom, okay. In front of me, I have three piles of names. As usual, I don't even know when we started doing this, but we'll take it tribe by tribe. But the order that we take that we talk through these people is going to be determined by drawing names out of a hat. First, Dom, would you like to start with the pile on the left, in the middle, or on the right?
But I don't care. So I will just say the middle.
Okay. The middle pile is the
classic default.
Yeah, okay. We're going to start with the healers, your favorite tribe, the throwaway tribe, as I just described. Not, the players are not throwaways, but the healers, the theme is the throwaway tribe of the season.
Who we got? I'm excited.
So yeah, I'll run through just quickly the six people on the healers tribe before we go through them. We are looking at Cole, Desi, Jessica, Mike, Joe, and Rourke. Roark, am I saying that right? No one talks about her, so I don't know how to pronounce her name. No one is talking at all about Rourke.
Well, I feel like however I pronounce it, you're going to roast me for it. So I'm just going to go with Rourke, and I'm going to plant my flag there, and I'm not going to hear anything otherwise.
Okay, well, we'll see if she is the first one out of the hat. I'm mixing them around right now. Here we go. It is not Rourke. It is Desi. Congratulations, the winner of the lottery pick of this season. Where do we want to go with Desi here? Desi is, I think the place I want to go is to my notes on the healers, because I'm still at the top of my notes here. Desi is 27, and she is a professor of leadership studies and physical therapy. And now, Desi, I'll just quickly jump off. Desi was one of the most impressive people in this cast to me. Are you on board with that?
In terms of what? Life accomplishments?
Skipping through, we don't need to go through like her whole biography or anything, but a big piece of how I'm looking at these people, and probably a lot of the terms that I'm going to be framing a lot of this in, is just kind of like the vibe that they give off when they're talking about how they want to go out there and approach the game. Like, I think that is the most important thing when you're trying to deduce pregame who's got potential and who doesn't is what kind of mentality they're going into the game with and how well suited they seem to be to pull off, you know, whatever game plan they're talking about. And Desi to me seems like someone who, if things, you know, don't get off to a horrible start for her, I could see her being very good at just connecting with people right away, maintaining her focus within the game, thinking in rational, self-interested terms, and being good at, you know, executing in the fundamentally critical ways that a good Survivor player would.
Yeah, Desi, looking at her bio, and it would take us far too long to list all of the things that she's apparently doing with her life, but for someone who is not a hustler, she has a lot of side hustles. She's got a lot of stuff going on. She seems to be pretty good at most of it, and my only worry is that it almost seems too good to be true.
Yeah.
She seems like someone who just kind of succeeds at whatever she tries. And so, like, is this the one thing that, is this the thing that brings that streak to an end? Right? Is this like the one blemish on her eventual resume that, you know, when she's 40 and running the world, like, this is the thing that no one talks about anymore?
Right. I don't want to peek too early here with like the glowing commentary on people, but like, I really do feel like out of this whole cast, Desi would be near the top of my list of like complete packages for a Survivor player. But like you're saying, I think the last person I said that about was Mari Takahashi. So this could definitely go any number of ways.
Yeah, well, some of us were urging caution about Mari, and those of us were right. So read into that what you will. But the fact that I am on board with Desi should tell you a lot more, I think. And so she was recruited, I believe, but she says in her bio that when she learned she was going to be on the show, she went back, she studied extensively, she tried to learn what she was getting herself into and understand her own position in that. And that's really all you can ask for, I think.
Right, yeah, no, exactly. I mean, she didn't go Garrett Adelstein style where she put in like 2,000 hours or whatever. But I think she said she watched somewhere in the neighborhood of like 20 of the seasons or something. She was one of the people who knew who Josh Wiggler was upon meeting him for her pregame interview. That's something I asked him about before Millennials versus Gen X started. I said, who were the people who immediately recognized you? And there were like five of them, and all of them went pretty far. I think like Zeke was the first one of them to go out, and the rest like all made the final six or seven. And Desi was one of those people. And Dom, we earlier did a draft of all of these people, and I had the number one overall pick. I didn't end up picking Desi because I thought she might fall to me, frankly. She was the other person that I was considering taking with the number one overall pick in this draft, although I was a little more reluctant than I otherwise would have been to pick her because recently we got a document from good friend of the podcast, Curtis Morrison, who has gone back, looked through all of our drafts from the last like several years and like sorted through round by round how much value we got from every single one of those picks. And now when we do these drafts, now knowing that they're going to be that every single pick, even in the late rounds, is going to get criticized depending on how well they do, Dom now takes like 20 minutes per pick to do his drafts. It's an absolute nightmare. But I didn't want to my big hole is Curtis is he not only like figured out how well each of us had done, but he like drew conclusions about like what our biases were within the drafts and where we were missing value. And women under 33 was a huge leak for me, so I did not want to use another number one overall pick on someone like that.
It was extensively broken down by age, race, gender, just combing through every flaw that we've made in our draft over the past like eight seasons to criticize us. But yeah, so instead of picking a woman under 33, you went with another woman under 33 instead, because you hate Desi and you wanted me to have her instead.
Something like that. Not only this was the best part, I will say, about all of the preseason stuff from Game Changers, was when the Josh and Gordon and Dalton would ask them what they thought about each other. And Josh has been doing that again for this season. Now, obviously, they don't know each other for the most part. Out of this cast, there are a couple of people that know each other, which is crazy. We'll get to that later. But it is interesting, I think, to hear what people are saying just about the vibes that they're picking up from others at pregame Ponderosa. And I am a little alarmed. It sounds like everyone seems pretty terrified of Desi. So we'll see how that goes. I definitely don't think it's a lock that she's going to be in there deep, but I would definitely say out of this entire group of 18, she's definitely got to be near the top of my leaderboard at this point, as things to, you know, without having seen any of them play yet.
Yeah, it is a big concern. And the other one for me is that she seems like, as I alluded to earlier, she's a high-powered person. She seems like someone who could routinely do like 12, 14-hour days. And I worry that in a game which has so much downtime and so much need to just kind of relax and wait for the game to come to you, that she could rub people the wrong way. And if people go in with the assumption based on these like pre-game impressions that she is that way, it's going to take not very much at all for them to confirm that in their own minds and think, okay, we just need to get her out.
Yeah.
So I think she could be a high variance pick. If she makes it through the first few weeks, though, I think the sky's the limit.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so as well. Definitely hoping for the best here for Desi. Let's move on. We're diving back into the hat. We have Jessica. Jessica is 29. She is a nurse practitioner. Jessica had a quote in her CBS video. I'm essentially basing everything I'm talking about, by the way, off of the Josh Wigler interviews and the CBS 2-minute meet so-and-so videos. In her video, she said, quote, "My biggest concern is that I talk a lot and I say things without thinking about how they sound," which is certainly something that I can relate to myself. And one of the main reasons I do not ever want to go on Survivor. I'm aware of that about myself, and I want no part of it.
Yeah, you could get that engraved on your tombstone and no one would be able to tell that it didn't come from you.
No, I've already got my epitaph has already been picked out. It's "Here lies Colin Stone," and it's not even close.
Perfect. But I actually really like Jessica. And as someone who is just relentlessly cheerful and happy and peppy, I was glad to find someone who really matches my personality type at long last.
Yeah, another bubbly blonde just like you.
Yeah. So I really like Jessica. I my concern, I guess, is it comes across as very endearing in a 2-minute CBS bio. I don't know if when people have to live with her 24/7, if that's going to remain endearing over time. I also don't know if that kind of cheerfulness is going to die down a bit when you're out there in this incredibly like high pressure environment and you haven't had a proper meal in 3 weeks and so on and so forth. I wonder if that's just a product of the environment that she's in, but if she's able to carry that into the game and kind of moderate it when she needs to, then I can see people really liking her.
Right. I mean,
I think the audience could really like her too.
Yeah, totally. You were just saying this about Desi, about maybe she would have a hard time navigating how much just downtime there is on Survivor. And this is certainly something we see, I think, play a much bigger role on Big Brother, where there's a week between every vote and there's nothing to do in that house. There's no shelter to build. There's no, the challenges take an hour and that's it or whatever. I think Jessica could be someone who might be well suited to just hanging out and being social with people. Like, she seems, maybe I'm just saying this because she's blonde and from Kentucky or whatever, and from the South, but she seems like in that kind of Natalie White, Jeffra kind of mold. But I would say she honestly, to me, seems to have a bit more substance to her. Like, it seems like she brings a bit more to the table than particularly those two, but just the general Southern blondes that they end up, you know, your Purple Kellys of the world, that they end up often just casting aside. I could see Jessica being actually a really interesting character, not just there to fill out a bikini like we sometimes see from this person.
Yeah, my unfortunate read on Jessica is that she's going to be that pre-merge boo that everyone talks about as, oh, I really wish they had gone further. Maybe if there's a second chance season, we'll see her back one day.
Sounds a little Wentworth-esque. It sounds like someone's got themselves a crush on the new Kelly Wentworth. Dom, how could you? This is going to haunt you for years, falling for the Kelly Wentworth type.
I really hope I'm wrong, though, and not just because it means you will be able to make those comparisons for the next 5 years.
Now I'm actually rooting for that. Like, why doesn't that ever happen to you? And I guess the answer is because you never like or support virtually anything. Certainly nothing that's not a lock to actually come in. So I guess you're never putting yourself in that position to have the San Juan del Sur Kelly Wentworth experience or the Mari Takahashi experience go for you. But if Jessica does get booted early, I will completely revise history and say that you were all in on her preseason and that you deserve scorn for that for the rest of your life.
Yeah. How is the Mari Takahashi experience going for you, by the way?
Surprisingly, not that poorly. I really thought it would have been worse, but I think people were more distracted over the course of that season by the Ken experience.
All I'm saying is, by this point, Kelly Wentworth had come back and started to prove me wrong. So the clock is ticking for Mari, but it can still happen.
It could still happen, man. She's famous somewhat. She's internet famous, so not really famous, but she has an audience that CBS might think the kids would be into.
Is Mari a bigger YouTube sensation than whoever it is that Ali works for? Whatever. Go with me here.
I'm going to say yes, Dom. As long as there are no follow-up questions, absolutely yes. Okay. Yeah, so Jessica here, she says, I thought this was interesting. She says, I hope to align myself with someone a little rough. Every demon needs an angel. Perhaps wanting to play that Natalie White kind of role for someone. Unfortunately for her, she's got that aggro-seeming bald guy on her tribe, Joe, that we'll talk about soon. Do you feel like this is potentially a good call here for Jessica? Because she doesn't seem like the conventional type to go out and, you know, run an alliance and take the bull by the horns right away.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for a demon in this cast, or certainly on this tribe, then Joe is maybe the only real candidate. But I guess a concern for Jessica is looking at the other people on her tribe here. Like, you have Desi, who I think makes a big first impression. Joe obviously stands out in a crowd. But I think personality-wise, maybe this is the most dysfunctional bunch of all time, and we're just not appreciating it yet. But they seem like a pretty measured group. And if Jessica comes in and she's at this 10 out of 10 energy level the entire time, that can mark her out as someone who needs to go straight away. And I really hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly wouldn't shock me if she's gone early. We hear a lot about how if you just get off to a rough day one, sometimes that's all it takes. And she certainly has a possibility of having that happen to her, but I definitely think she's in there with some upside. Any other closing thoughts on Jessica for the time being?
Yeah, I don't want to jinx it any further, so let's move swiftly on.
Okay. Your girl Jessica is in the rearview mirror as we move on to Rourke. I guess we'll start off
your
with
girl, girl Rourke, I suppose.
Yeah, Dom already tipped this a little bit. In not wanting to take Desi because I always go too early on the younger women, I decided instead to take Rourke, who is also a young woman. But frankly, my draft strategy there was I didn't think Rourke was going to fall back to me once Dom got the two picks after that. And Rourke, I guess to just dive into it, Rourke definitely seems like someone who is in there with a very real chance at doing well here. She's certainly very familiar with the game, which is always what we like to see. And frankly, to go back to what I said was just the way that I'm viewing how realistic these people have, the realistic the chances are that these people are going to do well, is just their mindset entering the game and how capable they seem at converting on making that, go their way. I think Rourke, like Desi before her, is very near the top of my list. Like you mentioned, I took her number one overall. I think she seems to be in that kind of like Sophie and Aubrey mold that has certainly had success on Survivor in the past. And I think she could even be more personable than they are. I think she really seems to understand what may be setting her back in the game. Like she says, she self-describes as just being bossy and hopes to rein it in. That doesn't always go well for people, but it really does strike me that Rourke, out of this whole cast, might be the most mentally prepared for being out there, I would say, in terms of the game.
Well, what's interesting with the bossiness point is that when Josh was asking everyone else about her, they all seemed to say that, oh, she seems quite shy, quite timid. I don't know if she's going to be able to really assert herself. And here she is saying that her biggest concern is coming in and being too domineering. So that's going to be a kind of weird mismatch to see play out. But yeah, you sniped me with your Rourke pick. I was going to take her as high as I possibly could. And I think she is the consensus, like, super fan favorite of the season, not just because she is one of us, right? She is like maybe she's the Adam Klein. Like she is the person who is most involved in the fan base already, but also because I do think that she seems to have like the knowledge and the skills to really make it far and do well. And I hope she does, even if it means having to pass the crown back over to you again.
Yeah. Well, it's back where it belongs. I can't believe it's been that you even won a Survivor draft. You won an auction draft too. The room is just spinning for me right now. I definitely feel
I have
like
momentum. Yeah.
You have all the momentum right now. But yeah, no, I'm definitely happy with Rourke at number one overall. And frankly, if we want to just talk just quickly, I hashtag no one cares about your draft, but I really felt like this was a tough group to draft. It felt like there were a few people that I had near the top, and then just everyone was in the middle for me. I felt like everyone just should fall somewhere between like the 6th and 14th pick. Just 16 out of these 18 people should be in that range.
And sometimes that means you have an uninspiring cast on your hands and there's no one who really stands out for good or bad reasons. But this time, I didn't really feel that way. I thought everyone has this potential that maybe won't get realized, and there's no one who seems like they're just going to run away with this whole thing.
Yeah. No, and I definitely am with you. I think that could definitely be a good thing to have people who are just in there being competitive and not have people who really stand out about above the pack. Like we saw certainly last season in Game Changers, and obviously it's different when the other people already go in there knowing who the big threats from previous seasons are. But an unbalanced cast is one of the worst things for a game of Survivor, I would say. I think it's good to have everyone at roughly equal skill levels, and I think this is hopefully going to be one such case there. Anything else you want to say about Rourke? As mentioned, she's certainly been like Twitter's favorite of the season. I'd imagine that's going to continue. I don't see her realistically not being like a popular character on the show, Frank. I think she's just such a engaging speaker that and doesn't seem to be seem to have a personality that the show is going to want to clown on.
Yeah, you made the Sophie comparison, which is one I've seen elsewhere too, and I think there really is something to that. And it's, you know, whenever you compare someone to a former winner, that's always setting the bar really high for them. But there's just something about the way that the two of them carry themselves and kind of the way they express themselves, I think, is kind of aligned. And I hope that Rourke can continue what Sophie started, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the issues that people had with Sophie way back when was, you know, she was too kind of cold to other people and so on. And that was like Sophie at 21, 22. And Sophie over the past few years has really become this this absolute hit with the hardcore fan base, if she wasn't already. And Rourke, I think, is able to step into her shoes. I think they're kind of roughly the same age now, if I'm not getting that too mixed up. So, you know, if Rourke is able to be the Sophie that won a season of Survivor 5 years later with that added kind of experience and groundedness, then that could be a recipe for great success.
Yeah, I definitely think that makes sense. Certainly wishing all the best for Rourke out there. We will move on to Mike, 43. Mike the urologist. This is a fun guy. He's a married father of three, and one of those kids, Dom, named after Ethan Zahn. Do you like that?
Yeah, I like Mike. I'm in on Mike, but this was something that really gave me pause because Ethan is fine. Okay, I like everyone else. I don't have a bad word to say about Ethan. However, this practice of like naming your kids after TV contestants, it doesn't really sit well with me. Unless it's Sangmin. If I had a kid, you know, it's Lee Sangmin Harvey would be in the rotation there somewhere. But I don't know. I have to imagine Ethan. I guess Colby would be more popular just in terms of how many people saw Australia, but behind Colby, is Ethan the most named after or whatever the phrase would be?
I mean, they have to be by far the top two, especially because they have distinct sounding names that the Gen Xers who were finally having kids wanted to give, you know, to give their children, because all of course their children are more special than the Johns and Peters of the world.
Naturally. I have to think there are some Rupus out there who are growing into bratty teenagers right now. It does seem to be a mostly male thing, though. Like, I'm sure there are some Stephanies out there and so on, but it does seem to be like, oh, I'm going to name my firstborn son after Ethan, and that's like the new trend now.
There's got to be some Parvatis out there. Like, I think the key is not only being likable, but having a distinct sounding name. Like, Stephanie's already... Yeah, how are you going to say, oh, I named her after Stephanie from Survivor? Like, that, I guess you could put the E in instead of the A, where it, like she misspells Stephanie somehow. She can't do even that right. But, yeah, I would. There's got to be at least one baby Parvati out there. I'm positive, Dom.
Who do you think has the fewest babies named after them?
I think that's like a 400-way tie between a lot of people. Yeah,
you think we're getting some Cochrans out there who are, you know, just growing out of the terrible toddler phase?
God help them if so. I mean, I think there could be some middle name Cochran kids out there that that could be given, you know, making their lives parents hell for now, but it'll all work out in the end, and they'll fly them out to Fiji for a delicious barbecue on their way to winning $1 million and some solid TV time.
Yeah, but probably some Malcolms during the rounds by now, I guess as well.
Yeah, yeah. Sadly, no JTs at this point, I would say, unfortunately. But okay, let's get into Mike here now. Mike, to me, I know this is the obvious and lazy comparison, but he seems to be in more of like the Dave Wright mold. I would say kind of like a David Sampson meets David Wright. Maybe I'm only saying that because he looks more like David Sampson. But I think this is a type that we're probably going to see around for a little while because of David Wright, especially if Mike ends up going far himself. Am I spacing on historic people in that kind of mold, or is this, do you think, going to be, I think this is going to be like one of the defining archetypes of this kind of generation of Survivor.
Yeah, even though I'm fairly sure you only made that David Wright plus David Sampson comparison because they're both called David, I think it might actually be perfect for Micah. And I think, so for a long time, Survivor has been struggling to find this quintessential older male archetype. I think we saw with Marty that they maybe wanted to lean into like this older corporate guy who's kind of a dick, kind of arrogant, and is going to get his comeuppance.
How dare you? Friend of the podcast, Marty Piombo. How could you say such horrible things?
No, big fan of Marty, but it was very clear what they were going for with him. And I think David Sampson, if he had lasted long enough, would have been in that mold too. Mike clearly is not. And I think you see with him and with David Wright, they're leaning very much in the other direction now.
Yeah.
Of these guys who are like neurotic, a bit awkward, who are struggling just with the situation, with their environment, how to carry themselves. And it's fun also to look at how this idea of superfans has fallen along these demographic lines. So with the younger super fans, it might feel weird to group Cochran and Spencer together because personality wise, like, obviously very different, but they have this idea in their mind now of what a young male super fan looks like and what the audience thinks they're going to look like too. Right. And that they have proven they're willing to just drive that into the ground. And then we're seeing as well with like the Hannahs and Aubreys of the world, again, even though in person they might be very different, those differences are completely elided in their mind. They know exactly what they're going for. And I think Rourke maybe is different enough to not fit in there, but in their minds, maybe she does.
Yeah, I think Rourke would fit into that. Yeah. Like we talked about, I think she is, I think, another attempt at finding, another Aubrey.
Yeah, but because they don't wear these massive glasses, right, they don't get typecast as one of them, but they've always struggled with these older superfans, especially the older female superfans, who like their fandom just never gets acknowledged, so you don't even know they exist in the first place, and it's hard to make them into a thing when you're not willing to do that. And then with the older guys, I think this might be the new mold of is Cochran at 40, right? It's David Wright, it's Mike, and this is going to be a theme that we start seeing more and more.
That's what I was going to say, is I think this stems from Cochran being such a big fan favorite, and then they found, in looking for more people with that kind of perspective, that it often came, I think, and often will come, from an older person than someone like Cochran, who was, whatever he was, like 24 his first time. I think typically that's not going to be where you're going to find that kind of point of view on just life in the game. And I think they found David Wright and said, oh, this is, this kind of guy seems like he could be a home run in that department. He absolutely was. And I think Mike is the follow-up to David Wright. I think now that is, like we've been talking about, almost becoming an actual archetype on the show. And I'm actually, is it fair to say that Steven might have been one of the people who was in this mold back when he was first playing in Token Chains, like the fish back out of water, as he describes himself?
Yeah, well, so do you think that between Token Chains and Cambodia, he crossed that age divide? Like, he went from millennial to Gen X, effectively, and we get to see two sides of that coin.
I think that there's could be something to that, but I also think his second time around, whether it was because of his age or not, but I think it was more just because of how things went for him, I think he would definitely qualify, Steven in Cambodia, as this kind of strategic-minded person who's always thinking about the game and obviously knows a ton about the game. Some might say he knows it all about the game. And while also being there to offer the perspective that I think they just really like having, that they can't get out of pretty much anyone else in most of their casts.
Yeah, well, Steven is talking about the game and about the place of people like him inside the game every single week as a hobby/job. So he's going to be much better at it on top of his just being naturally articulate and expressive than the vast majority of people. But it seems like whoever they find end up in that role, whether it's him or Cochran or Spencer, does a very good job of giving them what they want as producers in terms of just being a good narrator and everything else. And I wonder if, as they branch out and try to find like the David Wrights or maybe the Mike Zahalskis, if they can live up to that challenge.
Yeah, well, I think, that might be a way of putting it. As for me, I feel like there might be some pressure on Mike, maybe not any that he's feeling himself, but I do feel like this character, this type of player within the game, at least recently, has done pretty well, and maybe the other players might pick up on that. Like, they've seen, the most recent season they saw was David Wright, and I imagine that's going to jump off the page with Mike for them. So how do you feel like this might go here for Mike?
Well, I was going to ask quickly, can you think of a female analog for the David slash Mike figure?
Give me some. I will think about it as you tell me how you think this is going to go for Mike. I don't have anyone off the top of my head.
You got some time to think. So,
is Cass fair? I don't want to put him in the camp of like, oh, he's going to be like a game destroyer necessarily. But I think Cass has that kind of different perspective.
Well, so Cass was always portrayed as this agent of destruction, but not really as a super fan, right? Want to fuck shit up inside the game, but that's not stemming from my fandom. That's just Cass being Cass, right? But as you try to think of a better example, I will continue with my thoughts on Mike. I do worry about Mike. It seems like these people always get enough time to come out of their shell and show people what they're truly made of. But eventually that's not going to be true of one of them. And I worry that, Mike end up paying the price for David Wright. As we said how, like Cameron on BB19, coming off the heels of like Ian and Steve doing so well, the bar is going to be set so much higher for him. And he was not able to even come close to that. I worry that the same thing is true of Mike. Maybe that's not such an established thing yet that's just an abstract concern. He doesn't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I think what Mike has going against him that I think David Wright got, I mean, you can call it lucky or whatever, but I think David being in a 10-person tribe versus Mike being on a 6-person starting tribe, this is the kind of player that I would imagine would want to be blending into the background early and not, trying to stand out as little as possible. I think that would be a very deliberate kind of mindset for the Mikes and David Wrights of the world. And the 6-person tribe, as has been said many times before, there's just nowhere to hide in a 6-person tribe. So I think I would honestly say, as much as I do tend to love this kind of character on the show, and Mike seems certainly like he could be a ton of fun, I am definitely concerned about Mike. I think it would be, I could certainly see him having upside and being in there and being, if this goes Mike's way, I could see him being a huge, huge breakout character on the season. But I would definitely not be, I don't even remember where Mike got taken in our draft. But actually, I do remember where Mike got taken in our draft. You took him really highly in our draft.
Yeah, and see, this is the problem I'm having. I honestly don't know. And I know I said this about at least Jessica already, so eventually this card will end up being declined. But check back after, 4 weeks. And if Mike is still there, he will probably be near the top of my board, regardless of how it looks like he's doing in the game. Because it seems like these types always find a way to sneak their way to the top.
Yeah.
But initially, I do think there's a risk that he will be that guy who never gets to realize his potential, and that dream will end early for him, and that will be tragic if that's the case, because based on his pregame stuff, I like Mike quite a bit.
Right, I think we will probably end up using David Wright's name more in this podcast than some of the people we actually talk about on themselves as cast members, but I really do think it's bad for Mike that the last season, I believe, that these people got to see was, Dave. I think a big piece of why he was able to be successful was the element of surprise, people not seeing it coming, that guy would be the big power player until it was almost too late, whereas I think the radar is going to be on for Mike, and I frankly think he's going to, meet all of their expectations of him that it sounds like people are having pregame. Tons of people were talking about that being what they were expecting from Mike. So definitely excited, though, to see how things go for Mike. I don't think he's going to be boring. That much I would bet. So we will move on. Two names left
in the hat.
Oh, no, we will not move on.
Given that we're moving on, I'm guessing you don't have a good answer to my question.
Oh, I forgot to even start. Cass was a great answer to your question. Everyone at home already thought that Cass was the perfect answer. So do you have a good answer to your question?
Well, that feeds into the point I was trying to make, which is that I don't have a good answer. And I'm not sure that there is one, because if there would be a good answer, they don't let us become aware of that fact. So I think, Dawn Meehan, for instance, big fan of the show. The show represents so much to her and to her life, but she never gets portrayed as the neurotic superfan. She gets portrayed as very neurotic. That does not have any doubt about that. But it's not connected to her love of the show in the way that it seems to be for, whether it's Cochran or David Wright or whoever else you want to put on that list. And I'm sure as we get into talking about some of the other tribes, there are contestants on the season who I'm sure have been watching for a long time. But unless their fandom fits into this clearly defined plaster cast for how they want a superfan to look, that will not be acknowledged. And so whatever their successes or failures are within the context of the show, they'll be portrayed as due to other things or connected to other personality quirks. Their fandom might not become this explicit part of their narrative.
What do you think goes into that? Is there a deliberate effort to not want to, I don't want to say give credit, but not shine any light on that aspect? Or what do you think goes into it always being men, it seems, in that mold?
I honestly don't know. Now, I'm curious if people have theories on this, but I think the age split is significant too, because I think they see the Survivor superfan community as being largely populated by people in their early to mid 20s, maybe their early 30s, who yeah. can connect more with that younger crowd and who don't relate as much to someone who might be 45 with two kids, even if they are themselves a superfan.
Can I one from even the same season that I think might be more fitting, although I don't know if superfan would not be one of the first words I would use to describe her, but is Trish someone who might fit this mold? Trish from Kageyan?
And she, in a weird way, she could be the perfect example, because she could be, maybe, but we don't know, because she's not shown as a fan, right? It's right. not, oh, you don't get this confessional on the first episode of, I've been watching Survivor my whole life, and I name my kid Ethan or whatever people are doing nowadays. It's just, I'm Trish, I'm from Boston, I do X, Y, and Z. It's not connected up in the same way.
Yeah, well, I guess we should put out there, there's probably at least one person that, as usual, we are just not able to think of in the moment. If you have any good examples of this, tweet them at us, I suppose, at Colin Stone for me, at Dom HRV for him. If you, I'm sure there's got to be something out there that people are mad at us for not getting.
Okay, but as that madness continues to fester, let's move on to whoever the next contestant okay. ends up being.
That's right. I've had this. Okay. We have our next name out of the hat is Joe. Joe, 34, probation officer, and it certainly jumps off the page right away, Dom. This has been getting a lot of attention preseason. This looks to be the next in the kind of like Tony Vlachos, Russell Hantz, bald guy going out there to play incredibly aggressive Survivor. Where are you on Joe? Are you excited for this, or is this just a bad impression of Tony for you?
I like Joe. I think he captures a lot of that magic that made Tony so compelling, while being sufficiently different that it's not just like a dime store imitation. I think it almost cheapens him as a character to just compare him to Tony, even though they seem to have the exact same tattoo. Like they're covered in tattoos, but like the literal same tattoo seems to be a big part of this. But so I'm a fan of Joe. I get the sense that you're not, though. Do you see him as just a cheap Tony knockoff?
I really don't. Like, this is the thing is, Tony, for me personally, has set the bar just so insanely high historically for, Tony's very, very near the top of my just all-time favorite Survivor players, that right away I just feel like Joe is going to have probably a pretty close to impossible time of living up to that. And that's why I'm just not thrilled to right away, especially after seeing Tony last season not go well, see how it went for Russell after people got to see him play and have that not go well. I kind of like what we were saying about Mike and David Wright. I can't imagine people, especially on this team, aren't going to look at Joe and see, okay, this guy is just out here to be the new Tony Vlachos. I am certainly not going to be the fool who has watched that happen already and lets it happen to me. I think this is a recipe for disaster, frankly, for Joe. And maybe it will break such that he ends up being able to play that kind of style, but it really does, and play it successfully. But as far as I can tell, he does want to be out there like to manipulate people. And when you look and sound like exactly like Tony and Russell, that's not going to go your way when they've already played five combined seasons.
Yeah, it was weird in the pregame stuff how so much of the focus seemed to be on the tattoos he had of his kids, as opposed to the fact that in every other aspect he just looks and sounds exactly like Tony. Like, it's, and I imagine as well, if we were 10 seasons removed from this, and we'll get onto this shortly, I think he would be able to get away with that. I think people's minds are sufficiently, I think people's attention spans are sufficiently short that that would gradually fade away over time. But now, coming off of Tony going out so early in Game Changers, maybe that actually works in his favor, because like they see that it is possible for the Tony type to fail, and I'm sure some of them, even if they weren't fans coming into this, would have watched Tony's first season in casting. They see the chaos he was able to create, but maybe maybe it has been long enough somehow that they just don't care anymore.
I think the takeaway, and first of all, did this cast get to see Tony get voted out before they played? I don't know if that's fake news or not.
So in First Man Out, one of them alluded to, I think, seeing the Malcolm Boot episode just before they left.
You're right. Yeah, that's correct.
It wasn't even before they left. It was after they left, and they were able to see it before it actually aired.
Right. They were given the advance of it. Yeah, that's right. So I guess they would have seen Tony go out. But I would imagine the takeaway from that would be, well, I saw one season where they didn't vote Tony out, and look at how that went. And then this one seemed to go well when they just took Tony out. He was out there running around looking for idols, screaming in Llama on day one. Get rid of him right away. It seemed to go smoothly for that team, as far as I can tell, the rest of the way. And actually, speaking of people, as you were saying, like maybe 10 seasons from now, someone could get away with being a little more like Tony because of the short memories. We got a good tweet from our good friend Meg Z, and I thought this was a really interesting statistic. Dom, this is the first season that nobody put Parvati as the survivor that they were the most like. We're past the Parvati era of the survivor you're most like. We're on to the Kelly Wentworths, and I'm sure the Sarah Lacinas are going to be coming soon after that season has now aired.
So now that you've mentioned that, I was going to bring this up in a bit, but let's just dive into it now. There was a curious subplot with the pregame stuff this season, where I was looking at Chrissy's bio on CBS, and in response to the question of which survivor you most like, who's your favorite survivor, she was giving the standard answers. Oh, Spencer and Ty. And I thought, well, okay, you can try harder than that, surely, but it's hard to follow her when everyone else is doing the same thing. It turns out she wasn't doing that at all, because her original answer was Jenna, and she alluded to the famous peanut butter scene from the Amazon. But then at some point during the whole pregame process, that was changed to reflect the modern times. And I think it was A Tribe of One, who I don't know what his Twitter handle is exactly, but he's been writing some very good kind of long form or quasi long form pieces about the show. So I definitely recommend checking those out. He pointed out that he had these snapshots of side by side, her bio before, her bio after. And it makes you wonder, what is the statute of limitations on just how far they expect someone to remember in the show? So in 5 years' time, are we going to have references to Spencer and Ty being scrubbed out to replace them with whoever the hot new thing is? Or because like Parvati's last season was over 7 years ago at this point, and with that in mind, it's not too surprising that you just don't hear these references to it anymore. Mm-hmm. And the people who started watching the show in the past few years and haven't gone all the way back, haven't become these obsessive superfans, just don't really know who she is or don't see her as this important historical figure in the context of the show anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the people that are going to be, you know, in that 10 seasons from now, when maybe someone like Joe could have had a better chance because people had forgotten about Tony, we haven't even, the people who we're going to be talking about are being compared to then haven't even played for the first time yet. Most of them haven't even been cast yet, these future people that are going to be the entirety of who people are comparing themselves to in the future. I think Survivor really just does have a short memory, honestly. We'll certainly continue, I'm imagining, to have plenty of super fans on there that will make, they'll compare themselves to Rob Cesternino or whatever, and Boston Rob, I'm sure, will always be like a known enough person, I would imagine, to get occasional people pop up in there. But yeah, I mean, it seems like a trend that, and I can't believe no one's gone through and done like the statistical analysis of how far back people are reaching for their survivors they're most like, because it can't be more than an average of a season or two. I that's some math I would actually be interested in as far as survivor statistics. But I think
I'm sure I'm sure someone has deep out there in the far depths of the internet survivorverse. You can find that out. And if someone has dredged that up, please let us know, because that would be interesting to see.
Well, I think I'd like to close what I was getting at. I think people tend to have just very short memories, and the show is on board with that, because I think that's what they think the audience is. That's how the audience is as well. And frankly, I think they are correct about that. When I talk to just the people I know in my real life who watch the show on just a more casual basis, they won't remember like the winner's name from a couple of seasons ago. They watch Wednesday night and that's it. And like, that's how I am on plenty of other shows. I'm not trying to like talk shit about casual fans of things. But I think that's just the reality of the situation. Even when some of the, you know, like the trope of Parvati being named by 2/3 of the women on every cast, like it's almost weird that I'm longing for the days of Parvati being named now.
Right, it's now that she isn't the most popular answer, it's almost become hipster-esque to name right. Poverty. Like that's
right.
Acceptable again.
That was Meg Z actually pointed that out. That was the follow-up part of her tweet, I believe, was like, it's actually now going to be a sign of like super fandom that you're saying you're like Parvati, mm-hmm. when before it was just the stock answer if you've never seen the show before. So that's really fun. But okay, so let's go back into Joe. What, give me a reason to believe in Joe. Do you feel like this is going to go well for Joe? Because you said I was low on Joe. Are you high on Joe? I feel like you might be.
I'm not high on Joe, but I think so. When people compare him and Tony, just the fact that Joe is a probation officer as opposed to a cop makes a big difference, I think, because a cop is seen as like this kind of very like hyper masculine authoritarian profession where like you spend your day getting to tell people what to do, getting to impose your will on things. Whereas as a probation officer, you still have to deal with a lot of very difficult and challenging people, and you still to some degree have control over them, but it's very different. Like you actually have things that you need to accomplish. You need to convince them to act in a responsible way. And so Joe, like, he doesn't get to just go on this power trip, right? He has had to think about, how do I relate to people who aren't necessarily like me or who see me as this enemy or representing something that's the enemy? And maybe Joe's just bad at his job. Who knows? Maybe he was an ex-probation officer because he got fired a bunch of times. But assuming that's not the case, that suggests that I think Joe has more skills in his arsenal than you might expect from just any kind of Tony imitation. And Tony himself definitely had those skills as well. So I think there's reason to be optimistic about Joe. Having said that, on this tribe, when I think if he was on the tribe with like Simone, and not to spoil our thoughts about them, but there are some people who are a lot more kind of aggressive in their style of gameplay or how they say they want to play the game. If he was on the tribe with them and someone else might get caught in the crossfire, that would be one thing. With Joe, no one else is really trying to play the same kind of game as Joe. So if he's putting himself out there and people don't like it, he is the obvious target to just get knocked off.
Right. That's the thing. It's like, I want to leave the door open for sure, because I would have certainly said about both Tony and Russell pregame before their first time, like, if I had been shown like how they were really genuinely hoping to play the game, I'd be like, okay, well, these guys are clowns who aren't going to really have much of a chance at influencing, I would imagine, very many people. And obviously that was not the case for either of them. That really aggressive style definitely has upside. Like, you really can get a stranglehold on the game if it goes well and if you are capable enough of doing that. And I do think Joe has, I would imagine, a decent background in that would be helpful in if he was able to take control of the group. I think it would make sense to me why he would have the skill set to be able to pull that off. But the same way we were talking, to put it in Big Brother terms, and Rob, I think, was the one who coined this, and you referenced it earlier, like Cameron this season paying the bill for Ian and Steve winning Big Brother. I have to guess that Joe is going to go in here and pay the bill for Russell and Tony. Like, people are not going to say, okay, I want to work with that guy if they are even remotely familiar with Russell and Tony.
Yeah, in our commentary so far, we are assembling a pretty good Second Chances cast just based on one tribe from the season. So, but by the end, we're going to have a whole cast ready to go there.
Yeah, all right. So let's close out this Healers tribe, and we are closing with Cole. Cole is 24. He's the wilderness therapy guide, the rock climbing guide, and he works with disadvantaged teens and helps them learn, be introspective and get a new perspective on life. It actually sounds pretty interesting what Cole does, I have to say. I thought it was, on the surface, I thought it was going to be kind of stupid, but it actually sounded pretty legitimate.
Yeah, it sounds like just a bunch of hippie BS, but then you hear the details of it, and I'm not qualified to judge if it works or not, or if it's actually legitimate, but it sounds like it's on the level.
Yeah, and this is just, I know from talking very briefly, just as we were doing our draft, I took Cole very high in our draft, and you agreed with that. So diving right into it, I think Cole is someone we might agree about the most and be highest on the most out of this whole cast, which, and typically I would probably not be saying entering a random season of Survivor that I would generally be high on someone who lives out of his van or whatever. Like, that doesn't tend to strike me as someone who would go out there and crush Survivor. But I really feel like Cole's personality and just his tone of voice and his approach to not only the game but also just life and people, I think, is going to serve him really well out here. The comparison I would make is more of a Big Brother player, but he's also been on Survivor technically, is Hayden Moss. I could see him having that kind of Hayden upside, and I don't mean, you know, I would consider Hayden one of the best players in the history of CBS reality based on his performance on Big Brother and also in Survivor. I thought he absolutely slaughtered it and played a much better game than Tyson did on that season, but nonetheless. Where are you at on Cole? I know you like him, but how high do you think the ceiling really is? Does he have that Hayden upside for you?
I think he does. And for me, it's hard to distinguish between Cole and Devon. How are we saying this guy's
Devon.
Name? Okay, fine. Just checking, just putting it out there. Devon, and then you've got JP as well. All of these like strong, athletic guys who seem to have their head screwed on, right? Who seem to know what they're doing, and all of whom have been highlighted by their other competitors as people to watch, people who stand out right out of the gates. And of those three, I think Cole maybe is the most promising. Now, as to whether I like him, he's such an asshole, right? Working with disadvantaged teams, like he can't even make me feel justified in feeling jealous of him. It's like he's not enough of an asshole to make me feel like I have any kind of moral superiority to him.
Like the in the way that Adam Klein is an asshole for working with like a homeless shelter or whatever.
Right, and it's the same thing with Devon too. Like, oh, I want to start an after-school program for disadvantaged teams. Fuck you! Look, it'd be so much easier if these guys were the villains, if we could be justified in hating them, but we can't because they seem like everything about them is just flawless.
Yeah, well, I mean, Devon for me, we'll get more onto Devon later, but Cole is in a decidedly different camp than Devon for me. You know, even if they have you know, similarly philanthropic ideals outside of the game, but I think Cole, you know, you just listed through all of these younger guys who are in good shape that we get every single season of Survivor. And I really do believe that what separates the ones who can be successful from the ones who can't is having that kind of more subdued personality, because they're always going to be viewed as such big threats. And maybe subdued is the wrong word, but disarming, I really is how I would describe Cole. Even though everyone in their pregame stuff is all they're talking about is how he's got a million muscles and everyone's pegging him as a rock climber because that's all he's reading about. I really feel like even though they're going to probably have essentially Cole pegged in their own minds entering the game, that might actually work to his advantage when they're, I would imagine, when he's much cooler than I think they're anticipating he will be. I think that's a huge help.
And on this tribe in particular, we said with Joe that if he is that kind of intense personality, he might stand out. If Cole can just lay back, blend in, let everyone do their thing, I think that's the kind of vibe that's going to go down very well on that healer's tribe, especially.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely, I think we're both very high on Cole. I know we're both very high on Cole. I took him, I think, in my second set of picks. I took Rourke number one overall. You then picked numbers two and three, and then I took Cole and someone else in that next set of picks. So definitely looking forward to seeing how that goes. And at the same time, I do want to acknowledge he could go out there and be super boring. I don't think that's completely off the table, but I definitely am hoping that that's not the case.
Yeah. Any big picture takes on this healer's tribe as a whole before we move on?
Big picture takes on the healer's tribe is I would be forecasting Mike and Joe being in trouble on this tribe. What about you?
That sounds right to me. I like this tribe overall, and it might sound that we're being suspiciously positive so far. I think that's just a case of starting with the healer's tribe, and when it comes to some of these other characters, we're going to have some more... The taste will be hotter and more, yeah, more in line with what you expect.
Okay, well, Dom, I have a pile on the left now, and I have a pile on the right. Which one would you want to go to next?
Let's go pile on the left.
Pile on the left. We are going to the heroes. That's right. Get your swelling music ready and your tears about family and responsibility and America, because we're going to the heroes tribe. Dom, the first person out of the hat from the heroes is Ashley, 26, lifeguard, former lifeguard. She quit her job. Oh, no, not former lifeguard. She quit her regular job to pursue lifeguarding, full-time lifeguard now. I didn't know that was a, like, career transition. I'm not trying to talk poorly about lifeguards, but I've never really heard of someone going from being, like, a whatever, a nurse to a lifeguard.
Well, also, it's framed in these very, like, transformational terms. I uprooted my life. I walked away from normal career success to become a lifeguard, right?
It's like she got up and moved to L.A. to be an actress, except it was lifeguarding.
Sure, you hear people talking about quitting to follow their dreams, and for most people, their dreams don't involve being a lifeguard, but if hers does, then props to her, I suppose.
Yeah, so let's get in a little further to Ashley. Right off the bat, she says she may have a hard time biting her tongue out here. I feel like that's something we hear a lot from people pregame, and I don't really feel like it tends to go that well for the people who are saying, oh, I got to watch my mouth. It doesn't seem like they often are able to.
I agree, but it doesn't worry me too much about Ashley because, like Rourke, she seems like someone who expresses that concern, but it isn't really in line with the vibe they give off in their pregame stuff. So, yeah. Once again, it's like she says, oh, I have to worry that I got to bite my tongue. I can't be too aggressive. But she seems very kind of mild-mannered, and if anything, when other people are asked what they think about her, they say, oh, she seems a bit cold, a bit reserved, not quite sure what to think. So maybe that's going to be a different problem that she has to overcome instead.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is it really does make it – I know I sound almost weirdly focused on, like, people's tone of voice and just the vibe that they give off. But I really feel like if you look through the list of Survivor winners, that is a tremendously recurring theme across a ton of them. Is just being amicable and giving off just good energy around the island. And that is the same thing I picked up on with Ashley, is what several other people seem to flag up with Josh pregame, is she seemed to come off a little, maybe cold is the wrong word, but she just has kind of a flat affect about her. She doesn't put a lot of energy into the what she's saying. And while she may not be disinterested, it almost sounds like she's disinterested, and that is not a good recipe on Survivor, I would say.
Yeah, the first impressions from the others don't seem great, and I don't know if she's going to be making big impressions that can rebalance that. So I'm not as high on Ashley as other people seem to be. I've seen some very grudging winner picks for Ashley, people saying, I don't like her, I don't know why other people like her, but there's just something about her that gives me the impression of success, and I don't get that same impression. She seems nice enough, but I don't see it working for her.
Right. I think I would probably forecast for Ashley that she's not going to be like an early boot or anything. I would easily see her making the merge a lot of the time, and probably going fairly deep. I could see her having, you know, plenty of equity deep to make it deep, but I really don't know about winning. I think that's going to be somewhere that I'm going to have to, like, draw the line with Ashley until I see more. Like, maybe it's just a bad 2 minutes for her and she had just gotten up after no sleep or whatever. But that is where I would be seeing Ashley right now, is it really doesn't feel like she's got the personality, frankly, to make people really excited about working for her and then working with her and then voting for her in the end.
Yeah, she might be like the double boot episode, right? Minority Alliance is getting picked off post-merge and they really want to cut things down a bit, then they're just going to slot her in the first segment and then move on to the real exciting part of the hour.
Yeah, okay. And again, as with everyone, like, there should just be a blanket, wouldn't surprise me if we're completely off base here and they're just hilariously wrong about Ashley, because that there's always a few people every season preview podcast that we are completely off about.
And we have moved into the post-Kent era now, where actually things are true again. We can make these predictions and not feel guilty about it. And so that's what we're going to be doing.
That's
right. If they turn out to be wrong, that's fine. But that's the entire job of discussing the show, right? You have opinions, you share them with other people, and someone's going to be right, someone's going to be wrong, and the people who are right get to make fun of the rest of us, which usually we're on the wrong side of that. But
yeah, it's been way too long. I would love to rebound, but yeah, we're just diving in head first this season. Next name out of the hat, Dom. Okay, here's someone I'm really excited to get into. Chrissy, 46 years old, an actuary, and she... I really love, as I say, I feel like lately a lot of the older women that they've been casting, Chrissy is exactly what I want out there playing Survivor for this type. It really felt like for a long time they were putting out the older women in the cast without really much of a chance to win. And Chrissy, I really feel like, you know, we've already referenced her a little bit. I believe she's a big fan of the show. And she really does seem to have a personality that could lead to success in Survivor and getting along with a younger group of people.
Well, I'm going to push back on that a little bit. So when do you think that period was when there was this attitude in casting, and when did you think that started to shift?
I mean, I felt like, frankly, in like the Gabon, Token Jeans, Samoa, Redemption, like that kind of era, they were putting out some older women that just had no realistic chance.
Okay, that's actually a good call, I think, because starting with Holly Hoffman, I think we saw that start to come around again. So you had Holly, okay. Dawn, like Lisa Welch, or Cass moving on a bit further. Like I think they have improved heavily in that regard, but I do think there was this time in the middle there where just casting in general, even when in a broader sense it was doing okay, just had these weaknesses that they needed to address.
Right, and that's what I mean. Like, I feel like I say this all the time now about the older women they've been casting. Like, this is what I said about the aforementioned Trish on Cagayan, about like Denise, about Mama C, I'm sure, in Worlds Apart, is to have these people out there really playing for themselves and really thinking about it in game terms. I think you might be right that Holly Hoffman, when they saw the upside that she had and how close she came to winning the game, that's when they really realized, oh, we've been totally sleeping on this demographic forever. These people could be equally compelling characters and players that we've just never really given a shot to. And I'm worried that maybe Chrissy could be like a Christina Kell type, where she's so overtly interested in playing the game, but doesn't get along well enough, just quite well enough socially with enough of the group that she's viewed as a target. But I really do feel like Chrissy, when I hear her talk, I'm not going to say she's Denise Stapley, because that's just preposterous company for someone who I've only seen a 2-minute video of. But I do think that there is absolutely room for in Survivor for someone like this to succeed. And I think Chrissy could be it.
Yeah, well, if you listen to the official stats compiled by Curtis, I just hate older women, apparently. I have severe mommy issues, which are on display for you all to see. And but with that in mind, I agree with your larger point, and I do like Chrissy as well. I think she does have some potential here.
Yeah, she's going to lie about her age. As long as she has the mental, like, who was president when you were born, what year did you graduate high school, all of that timeline down, I don't think she has anything to worry about in that department. Where else do we want to go on Chrissy?
So on the age question, we had a question from one of our patrons, Lucy Ventress, asking, why do people lie about their age, and do you think it matters that much? And I think in Chrissy's case, like, if you're saying, okay, I'm 40 instead of 45, firstly, who cares? And secondly, that's a lot of effort to have to kind of keep up with maintaining for a lie which doesn't really have any real consequences. Like,
right.
If you say you're 5 years younger and then someone does the math and works out, okay, so that means you had a kid when you were 13. How did that work? Like, why does it matter? What's the upside here of telling that lie?
It's something that is very easy to slip up on. I agree. And there, it seems like, to go back to Denise, like, oh, if Malcolm had said, oh, what, Denise, she's 46? Forget it. I don't want to work with her, but if she's 41, I'm all in. Or, like, the jury wouldn't have voted for her if she'd been 46 instead of 41. It made absolutely no difference. But I do understand where Chrissy is coming from, which is wanting to, like, I've talked on the podcast many times before about that golden age, that age range for playing Survivor of, like, 28 to 35. And I do think on either end of that, I went on a long diatribe about how Will Wall or any high schooler would never have any chance of winning Survivor. No one in high school will ever win Survivor. I don't think anyone in their 70s would ever win Survivor. And I think it's kind of a bell curve like that. So I do understand why 40 does sound better than 46, I mean.
But also, if you're making that age difference large enough that it might actually mean something to some people, then it's going to seem very unrealistic. So if you're out there saying, well, excuse you, I'm actually 32 when you're 45, people are going to see through that. And such, I almost feel like because that lie is so pointless, that almost counts against you more than if it's an actual real lie that would make sense to lie about. Because it's like, well, if you're lying about that, and you're willing to lie about that, then what else are you going to lie about?
That's definitely true. And I believe she's going to say, this is such a nitpick on this, but she's going to say, I think she's 39, say 40. Everyone who's lying about their age says 29 or 39. Say 40 and people will believe you.
This is the same principle as labeling stuff like, oh, this cost $19.99 instead of $20, right? You kind of anchor it to this lower number to make it sound better, but people know what the deal is with that and with your age.
I've always wondered, like, who is that fooling? The $19.99, whatever, like, less than $20.
Yeah, but it's not, well, the point is, it's not meant to be a conscious thing. You're not meant to look at it and think, oh, well, it's in the 19, so therefore I'm going to buy it. But it just subconsciously, there's something in there that, I don't know, flips a switch or whatever and makes you buy it instead.
My brain goes to, I see what you're doing and I find it patronizing, so just charge me a flat 20 and I will respect you a lot more. All right, let's go back into the hat, back on our next hero. Katrina. So, okay, an interesting one to come right on the heels of Chrissy. Another 46-year-old woman here on the Heroes Tribe, a former Olympian, a mom, and a sports psychology professor. Give me, first of all, are you higher or lower on Katrina compared to Chrissy?
I think I'm slightly lower, but I don't really have strong opinions about either of them yet. Okay. They're very much like wait and see for me.
Okay, because I would also be slightly lower on Katrina, but I also would say I think she has a lot of upside too, frankly. I don't think it's going to be like both of them go out there and crush it, but I could easily see one of these two in there very deep with a real chance of winning.
So one obvious question that presents itself then is, we often talk about how people who are isolated as being a lot older tend to not really fit in with their tribe, and then even if they have some talent for the game, they can never really put that into practice just because of how big that difference is. When you have Chrissy and Katrina both in that, both roughly the same age on this tribe together, do you expect them to kind of bond over that and to want to be in some kind of alliance together? Or is it more of a case of, well, typically in these alliances that do work, you have one spot reserved for that older person, and I want to be that person. So like, yeah, there's only room on this island for the one of us.
That's the other thing is, if we look at the other four people on this tribe, we have Ashley, who we've already talked about. We have Ben, we have Alan, and we have JP. And I could see those four coming together. So you know, if Chrissy and Katrina end up hitting it off, I would be very worried about their position if they did end up actually wanting to work together early on. And maybe it'll play out completely differently, but that would actually probably be my call at this point, is one of them goes early and the other one goes really, really far. But let's get into a little more about Katrina in particular. Former Olympian, as I mentioned, I've always wondered what people who compete in the Olympics other than Michael Phelps do with life after the, like, it takes a lifetime of training to get to the Olympics, but everyone other than Michael Phelps, that one guy is, that's it. There's no professional swimming circuit for Katrina, to go compete in for the rest of her career.
Well, the answer is you tell everyone else that you were in the Olympics. That's what you do full time.
You go to like local high schools with your Olympic medals, I would imagine. I don't know. I'm going to try to like trash Olympians by any degree. I just have always wondered where one goes from that. And it does seem cool. It seems like she's stayed, active and interested, not only in sports, but in psychology. She's a sports psychology professor. I think that's a very cool combination.
It sounds like being an Olympian is like being the president. You just get to keep that title for the rest of your life, and that's the one defining feature that everyone remembers you by.
Yeah, I think it's basically exactly like being the president, Dom. Yeah.
Yeah, you can imagine Donald Trump in the Olympics, certainly.
Absolutely. Maybe this is like Cochran with the Harvard Law thing, where he just kept relentlessly bringing that up when he was trying to get on the show because he knew that would be a good hook for him. Like, maybe Katrina is gaming the system in here and is always bringing up the Olympics because she knows that's what's going to get her on the show. And huge applause for her if so.
So thinking back to the legend of Survivor, Crystal Cox, do we think that Katrina was actually a former Olympian, or is there some kind of shady stuff going on here?
Well, in defense of Crystal Cox, she did compete in the Olympics, just cheated in the Olympics.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, though. So is Katrina saying that she's an Olympic gold medalist or just a medalist at all? Or was she physically present at the Olympics, but just it doesn't go any further than
that? That's the thing. She said she was an Olympic athlete, so I would imagine she competed and did not medal, because I have never in my life encountered an Olympic athlete who medaled and did not bring that up when mentioning that they were in the Olympics. Not that I've been meeting a lot of Olympic athletes, at least not recently. So she, it seems like everyone around the pregame Ponderosa is feeling at least pretty good about Katrina. It seems like she's giving off a, quote, chill hippie woman vibe, which I think is definitely fine. Like, I actually think if this team stays safe for a while, I would say Chrissy would be the front runner to go further. If this team goes to a tribal council earlier, I could see Chrissy being the one to leave and then Katrina hanging out for a while. So I definitely think Katrina is someone I will have my eye on for sure this season.
Yeah, I might be reversing my take that Chrissy has better chances than Katrina, because one common danger we always see for older women on Survivor is just being labeled as weak or bad at challenges or lazy or something in that mold, even when they're not, even when they can absolutely hold their own. And Katrina, as a former Olympian and as a sports psychology professor, she is the last person who can be stuck with that label. So I think she'll get a fairer hearing, if you like, and if the rest of her is good enough to do well on Survivor, then she could be in with a good shot.
Yeah. So definitely looking forward to that. We will go to our next person. We have JP here. Do we know what JP? It's John. Is it John something? I don't know. I've already forgotten what JP stands for, but he's 28 and he's a fireman.
Yeah, whenever you have someone who abbreviates their names like AJ or JT or TJ or whatever, it's always the most bland thing. It's like John Patrick or whatever. It's never outlandish, right?
Right.
It's never something that you're trying to like cover up because you're embarrassed or anything like that.
Actually, I mean, you will not know the answer to this, and I shouldn't be saying that this is like a cool thing, but OJ Simpson, Orenthal James. I thought that was like a very interesting first name.
Yeah, Orenthal is a pretty sick name. That's
Yeah, I don't want to compliment O.J. Simpson. I don't want to make it sound like that, but I always thought that was a cool name.
You're complimenting his parents, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so I think after I name my firstborn Sangman, I think Orenthal is going to be in the mix there for my second son.
Yeah, that's right. So, Dom, as I mentioned, JP is a fireman. We've already got two fireman winners of Survivor in Jeremy and Tom Westman. We've also had Keith Nail go very deep twice, Wes Nail recently also, and we've had Cops be very successful as well. Where does this give JP an advantage in your mind? Because I feel like we're almost at the point where it has to, just being in that line of work.
Yeah, well, if you think of these professions that are just venerated by society, you have the police up there, you have the military, but both of those have these political implications around them. They can be a little bit controversial. Everyone loves firemen, right? There's no like archetypal hero that stands in your mind more than a fireman. So, yeah, I think it's the perfect role. Knowing nothing else about someone, if you told me, okay, there's a 28-year-old fireman who's going on Survivor, I'd say they're looking good already.
Yeah, I definitely feel like it is a solid starting point for anyone. My concern would be JP is obviously like a very shredded dude who is going to be an overt physical threat. And actually, Mike, the urologist, said of JP pregame, it's not like the Aussies or the Malcolms ever win. Are we maybe at the point where having so much going for you in the era of voting blocks and meat shields, etc., could actually be really good early on? Like, people are actively seeing the value in keeping you around as a big target for later.
Yeah, I don't know what point on the horseshoe we're at now, but yeah, it could be that it's the David Wrights who are now seen as the big threats. And it's especially the people like JP who are incredibly, I don't want to say boring, but they don't stand out, let's say that much, who, you know, obviously he's buff, he's built well, he's going to do well in the challenges, but he doesn't strike you as, oh, this guy is so arrogant, or we have to get this guy out because he's just dominating the game strategically. Like, I think JP, if anyone in his role can blend into the background, it's going to be him. And more on that shortly.
Yeah. I definitely am really curious to see how this goes for JP. He is definitely someone that would be in there for me as a potential winner, but I'm not sure just how high up my board, because to go back to my just personality radar, I don't know if he's gonna be like charming people anytime soon. To go back to Cole again, I have a lot more faith in Cole than JP to make that happen.
But you don't have any strong reads on JP yet?
Not particularly. I think he's going to be, for whatever reason, even though he's not personality-wise anything like him, I could see him playing like the John Mish role, where he is the known Captain America, and that's just his role in the game.
So you're saying you don't know too much about him. You'll see what happens and things like that.
What am I missing? What are you setting me up for?
Okay.
So maybe you haven't been following this, but there's been this in joke developing as Josh Wiggler's interviews get released, and we see the answers to these questions from more and more people. JP consistently is just hilariously non-committal. So here's JP on Joe. Hey, I don't know. Another guy and things like that. I don't really know much about him. Like I said, I'll just get to know him and we'll go from there. Here's JP on Rourke. Don't know too much about her. She seems like she has herself together, squared away. So we'll see what happens. Here's JP on Jessica. Another great looking girl. Don't know too much about her. It'll be great to get to know her. We'll see where it goes and things like that. Here's JP on Allie. Another athletic girl. Don't know too much about her or anything like that. We'll see what happens. And do you want to hazard a guess at what he says about Lauren?
Does he not know too much about her and he'll see how it goes? Because the funny thing is, Josh, it's not like Josh is asking him these questions. I'm sure Josh is listing them off 18 or 17 in a row of just getting nothing. But yeah, I don't really know. We'll see how it goes.
Well, so here's JP on Lauren. Another great contender and things like that. I'll get to know her and see what happens.
Ooh.
So I think if you tallied up all of his answers, you get 18. They're practically identical.
So he sounds like he's got like germs of Cody from Big Brother in him. I don't care.
And much like with Cody, it's so over the top that it's become interesting and funny again. and it's so extreme that everyone else, when they're talking about Cody, when they're talking about JP, they turn it into JP because they don't have any strong reads on him either. So here's what Ali says about JP. He seems nice. I don't really know too much about him. He kind of looks like your average American guy, you know? He could be nice and friendly, or he could be the opposite, a douchebag. I don't know. Here's Desi talking about him. He seems nice enough, but I don't have any real major reads on him. And it kind of continues in that vein. When people do express strong views, it's about how just bland he seems. So here's Cole giving what I think is the best pregame answer that anyone's given so far concerning JP. Quote, he seems to be like your stereotypical male, classic looks. He's pretty jacked and doesn't really say a whole lot or interact. Like when a helicopter flew in yesterday with Jeff Probst on it and everyone's freaking out, he just sat there in his chair. He didn't even turn around and look. He was just like dead to the world. Anyone who can't appreciate a good helicopter shot must be dead inside, because that's truly one of the finer things in life, if you ask me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Cody would have been right there just not caring, right along with JP. So I'm actually much lower on him now that I'm hearing all those quotes back to back to back to back to back or whatever. It just does not sound like he's got a personality that people are going to be actively wanting to work with and vote for in the end.
Yeah, it's so far from the answers I read, no one's like, oh, this guy seems great, I'm really excited to work with him to find out more about him. It's always, I don't really know, with this very skeptical tone to it. And I worry that in terms of him as a TV character, that the editors are not going to put in the work to make him like ironically interesting. It's going to be, he's going to get some boring confessional and then no one is going to hear from him ever again. He's going to drop off the face of the earth.
I could definitely see him being like almost like a Caleb in season 34 kind of unceremonious early boot if things just don't get off to a good start for him.
Yeah, he might be like the un-Carterish version of Carter.
Sure. Everyone was thinking Carter Williams when they saw JP. All right, let's move along. We will go on to Ben. Have we pulled the first? Did we go in three girls first and then three guys both times so far? I think we've gone.
Are you rigging the hat?
Is no, there something the hat going is, on the, there? The hat is a feminist, apparently. let's move on to Ben. Ben is a 34-year-old grocery warehouse worker at the time of the interview, which makes it sound like probably not at this time. And he's a former Marine. Always like to see that. Iraq war vet. He said he was in a really rough place in life, which happens far too often for a lot of vets. But he met a woman who now straightened him out. He's got a good family that he likes, which is good. You should always like your family if you can. And it seems
really
like...
Really piercing insights here.
I know. War heroes, good. Family, good. So I feel like Ben here, maybe I'm being regionalist, but the Mike Holloway vibes are definitely there for me, and I feel like he, like Mike Holloway, could be a very high high variance but high upside player.
Yeah, but he could also have that Mike Holloway downside if Mike had won those last five challenges and his place in history looks very different, that might be similar to what we end up seeing from Ben. Ben seems quite nice and interesting based on his pregame stuff and very intriguing. I'm excited to see if he does flame out or if he can keep it together. But it seems like, as you said, the others have already given him this reputation for scheming before he's had a chance to even do any scheming yet. So if he's able to catch on to how he's perceived and dial it down in those early stages, I think that's going to be necessary for him to do well.
Right. I would imagine Ben is going to be someone that the people were not, when asked about Ben, sitting there going, oh yeah, I don't really have a read on him one way or the other. I think a lot of people, whether they were right or wrong, probably had some preconceived notions about Ben before the game even started. And I think a big piece of how successful he's going to be is how he's able to not take advantage of, but how accurate those impressions are and how he is actually in reality compared to those impressions. Like it's been said about Tony that one of the things Tony has going for him is the first impression he gives off is, oh, this guy's an idiot. Whereas once you get to actually know him and hear him, it's like, oh, this guy's a genius sometimes in certain spots about, oh, he really does understand what's going on. I think Ben, if he can surprise people in some good ways early, that could be a really major advantage for him. Yeah. Ben is definitely someone I'm going to be really curious to see how this goes for. Do you feel like it's going to be overly likely that he's an early boot? I feel like Ben is one of the types that one of the safer bets to be in there a while.
So just looking at the Heroes Tribe, I could see this being almost like the disaster scenario where the nice but fairly unassuming people just come together, and anyone who shows any trace of going outside of that just gets chopped off without much fanfare.
Yeah. This is I might feel the least certain about how this tribe would be at a first tribal council than I do about the other two tribes. I think that's not even close for me. I could see this one going a few different ways depending on how the two older women fit in. I don't think there's pretty much anyone on this team that I would say can't be the first boot from this tribe.
And is that exciting for you? Is that a good thing in your mind?
Yeah, I think that's great. I think this is a really fun mix of people for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm less, and we haven't even got to Alan yet, but I think I'm less high on the Heroes Tribe, certainly than the Hustlers, maybe than the Healers. But I don't want to count them out just yet. We'll wait and see and things like that.
Okay. We'll wait and see, and we'll get to know them and see how things go from there. Dom, well, let's get to Alan right now. We have Alan Ball, who is 32, a former NFL player, may go back with TBD. And he is, of course, another in a long list of retired athletes, former professional athletes on Survivor. Not one of the more recognizable ones compared to like Jeff Kent or John Rocker or Scott Pollard. But do you still feel like the pro athlete on Survivor is something that we need to explore? It seems like every two or three seasons at least.
I love having these pro athletes or ex-pro athletes out there because of those traits that they bring to the game, where they are these hyper-competitive figures who will always mix it up, always be in there. They'll never just go out quietly. They will always fight for their place in the game. But that's what makes them interesting. It's not the fact that they did play in the NFL or whatever. And I could do without this storyline that we seem to have every single time of, oh, well, I'm not going to tell anyone that I was a former pro athlete. Or, like, dude, you're 6'7" and you're killing it in the challenges. They know, right? Or if they don't know, they at least have an inkling. So I hope that Alan's storyline is more than will people figure out the glaringly obvious and more about what Alan himself can bring to the game, which hopefully is a lot.
Right. It seems like, oh, I'm not going to tell people. And the only real suspense about the early storyline for the former pro athlete is like what fake profession they're going to choose to tell people. I always wonder what they're going for when they cast these former pro athletes, how much of the celebrity factor they hope plays into it. Now, I know like Jeff Kent was probably, by far, I would say, the most successful of the pro athletes that they've had on the show. Like, Jimmy Johnson was a coach, not an athlete. Otherwise, he would be the obvious number one. But Jimmy Johnson, you know, when you bring people in that were that famous and that successful, you find out on day nine that they say, fuck this, I've got $20 million, let me go home. I wonder how much they want, though, the Scott Pollard or Cliff Robinsons, the people that are going in there, not lying about who they are. I feel like they're always trying to get that celebrity factor to play a role, and it never does.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that I forgot to mention, that these former athletes, they're usually so loaded that they don't need to care about the money, which in Jimmy Johnson's case was not great, but for most of them means they're not going to play passively just to try and move up the pay ladder. They are going to be taking these high variance lines because they want to be at the top, not just because of their, you know, not just because they're competitive, but because it doesn't have the same like high stakes for them that it does for other people.
Right.
And as we've seen on certain other shows, which we won't name, that I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I mean, frankly, anyone who plays in the NBA or NFL or whatever, there is such, I would say, an overwhelmingly, like, there's too much of an emphasis placed on championships and how vital it is to have won a championship. And I think they have that mentality of, like, all I care about is getting first place. The rest is all the same.
Yeah, it's probably very good for viewers, actually, that a lot of sportsmen tend to not have a solid understanding, or really any understanding of variance. Like, it's, it makes it that much more exciting that they're always, you know, they have to be number one at all times, or it's like this permanent blow to their ego.
Yeah.
It's not great if you're the owner of the team, probably, but it's great if you're just a fan who wants to see them just go at it constantly.
Well, are you excited for Alan, the prospect of Alan being out here on Survivor? Because I actually, frankly, feel like he's one of the people I'm most looking forward to in this cast.
Okay, why do you say that?
Well, I to go back to just the people's vibes that they give off, which I just think is so important. He seems just like a really charming kind of speaker when he's talking to people, and maybe that will down the line come back to bite him, and people will feel like he's being too much of a salesman or whatever. But I think right away, while I don't think he's 100% lock safe to definitely not be the hashtag first one out, he would probably be the person I would list as the safest, either he or Ben, from this tribe. And it seems like everyone, at least as far as they're telling Josh, is feeling good about Alan pregame. It seems like he's really giving off an actively good kind of vibe to people. Like, I'm sure it's nothing more than just smiling. They're not even allowed to talk. But that's am I wrong in that? You're giving me a weird look.
No, it's just that for someone who seems to be the talk of the town, both with the other castaways and with the fan base, I don't have a strong view about Alan. And now I'm wondering what I'm missing. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm certainly not saying like, hey, I'm all in on Alan. He's my Australian king of the season. But I don't know. I think he's one of the favorites to be a really fun character on TV. Like, I think he's going to be one of the better people in confessionals. That would be one of my early calls about Alan. And I definitely hope that he's out there for a while. There's no way anyone's going to recognize him, by the way. That's not going to play a role at all. So any other thoughts on Alan, or are we good to move on to our final tribe?
No, let's do it.
All right, on to the Hustlers tribe. First name out of the hat. Let's see if the glass ceiling continues to be shattered as we talk about... Nope, Devin. It's a dude. Sorry. But okay, let's get into Devin, 24-year-old surf instructor. He came up a little bit earlier, but I think Devin... I assume Taylor from Millennials versus Gen X is the second chance person that he is now playing for, if we're going to have Mike be the David Wright and whoever else the other one was that someone else. I feel like Devin was probably cast with Taylor in mind. What do you think about Devin here? It sounded earlier like you felt like Devin had some real upside.
Yeah, I don't want to like Devin, but he seems like he has a lot of things going for him. And I worry that it's almost too much. And like the reason we were so high on Cole was because we thought he seems like he is good enough at challenges. He seems like he's sociable enough. He's good enough at all of these things, but not excessively so to the point where it just seems outrageous. Whereas Devin really does. Like Devin, you look at him and it's like, okay, this guy is, he can't escape your attention.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm understating how true that is of Cole as well. I'm sure people who are more interested in him or certain aspects of him would disagree with me there. But Devin, I think maybe he is going to be the tailor of someone who just never really gets it together within the game and lives into that like jock stereotype.
Right. I mean, that's really only the only path that I'm seeing for Devin, and maybe I'm being too quick to judge or too superficial or whatever. But to go back to like tone of voice and just vibe, to once again bring up Cody from Big Brother and just the apathy towards every single thing, every single major event that goes on around him. Devin really just sounds to me like when he speaks, like Cody does, like nothing really interests him at all. And I don't think that's where you want to be out there on the Survivor Island. Like, I think he even says himself, I'm just going to play dumb and let them underestimate me. And I don't like to put it in the terms people famously used for Fabio, who went on to win the game. Like there is upside to this person, apparently, but I feel like he's going to not probably have to work too hard to get people to underestimate him.
But the issue for us as pundits, if you like, of the Fabio thing is that now anytime there's anyone who comes along who seems even remotely similar to Fabio, people just raise the question, oh, well, Fabio won, so you can't count him out. And that's true, but it's those comparisons only stretch to a certain point.
Right, and consider also that Fabio won because he ran the table in challenges. He would have been completely out of the game had it not been in, had he not been immune for the last whatever it was, three rounds.
Yeah, nobody asked if someone in the new cast has Benry upside, right? Even though, in terms of their role in the game, they were basically the same up until that point. But also, everyone comes into the season saying, oh, I'm just going to play dumb and let them underestimate me. And often, that idea relies on you actually being a lot smarter than they think you are, which often is not the case, even if maybe they're not being very charitable.
Yeah, I feel like Devin is, while I do, I feel like sound like I'm judging him kind of harshly, I actually do think he has a chance of actually being successful in the game in the short term. I just don't, it's only winning that I'm talking about him not being near the top of my board. I actually do think he's someone who is probably going to be on what I would imagine will be a pretty chaotic tribe. It doesn't seem like there are any, other than the two people who already know each other in real life, any combination of people who are going to be too quick to click here. So I think Devin, just by being kind of like a chill, laid-back guy, is actually in pretty good shape to not be voted out, not be the hashtag first one out from this tribe, and actually be in there with a good chance of making the merge. It just, once he hits that merge, he's such an obvious physical threat, and I just can't, at this point, see him doing a ton in the way of making a really compelling case for himself, or like doing a lot of really flashy or effective game moves, frankly, to advance his position within the game. I think he's honestly, and I hope I'm wrong, but I would forecast him being more of like a spectator. And maybe he definitely could be, go in there and be the total opposite potentially, and go in there wanting to have complete control over everything. But I just don't see it being anywhere in the middle of the road. Either way, I think it's going to be bad for him.
You're still so scared now of making any kind of definitive prediction. Like, there's got to be someone in here that you just have nothing good to say about. It's like, okay, that person's gone first, or I'm an idiot, right?
Yeah.
There's got to be, surely. Maybe we haven't reached them yet, but...
Yeah, there is someone, I would say, that I have stronger takes on. I feel like I've been complimentary and had strongly complimentary takes on people. I just am sick of getting people sending us back quotes from what we said in the preview show, and like we went too far based on 2-minute videos and just sound like complete idiots. And I frankly feel like we ruin our credibility when we do that kind of stuff.
That's already a lost cause. We're never getting that back. So it's almost liberating not having to worry about that anymore.
Okay. Well, Devin, then, worst player of the season. He's the first one out. No, I'm just kidding. It wouldn't shock me, again, if frankly 15-ish out of the 18 people on this cast were the first boot. I think plenty of people have first boot equity.
Well, that's a scorching hot take. Everyone is an idiot, according to Colin Stone.
Yeah, that's exactly, that's going to be the name of this podcast. Everyone is an idiot, season 35 preview. What do you think about Devin? Do you see him? I know, you sound to be a little higher on him than I do, but do you see him having actual winner upside here, Dom?
I don't think so. I think it's no. To put it shortly,
yeah.
Did I take him? Where did he fall? Where it actually counts?
He went near the back of the draft. He was he was in one of the last few sets of picks. He was the third from the bottom on your team. So whatever pick that is.
Yeah, and again, I don't know if these comparisons are even sensible to make in the first place, but I know that for that, when I was thinking about Cole versus Devin versus JP, Cole was the one I wanted, and then Devin was, if I get him, then fair enough, and if I don't, well, there he goes.
I can say this now, in thinking back to my state of mind when we were drafting, Devin was someone I was never drafting. It was very near the bottom of my board. It would have been very tough for me to draft Devin, yeah.
And that speaks for itself. So any Devin fans, send your hate mail to at Colin Stone and let him know what you think.
This is why you have to do the qualifiers, that they might be good. All right. Let's dip back into the hat here. We will move to Lauren. And this is the aforementioned person I might have a stronger take on. So I'll just dive right in, not even concern myself with what you think about Lauren, and just power forward. I'm going to see if I can roll 2 minutes here straight uninterrupted. No, I'm just kidding. Lauren, 35, fisherman, comes from a family of fishermen, also has a 9-year-old daughter. To dive into Lauren, she says in her video, quote, "I'm hard-headed and set in my ways. To work with me, you've got to be extremely flexible. I've always been called stubborn." It does not seem to me also like Lauren has the extroverted personality, I would say, required for someone with that kind of stubbornness to get people to do what they want. Lauren is someone that I feel like I am forecastingly decidedly negative things for, and I feel bad about that. Like, I don't want to sound like I hate Lauren as a person. I don't see how this is going to be a game. Like, I don't see how in casting they had Lauren on the table and anyone really thought she's going to be a seriously competitive Survivor player.
Yeah, I do like Lauren a lot, but I also feel quite sympathetic towards her in terms of the game, and that's not a good thing, I would say, because I see kind of what you're saying, that I think she seems like a genuine introvert, and a lot of the time we have these people who seem like, oh, they're a little bit awkward, or they say that they're not great at connecting with people, or that people have to play by their rules, but in practice they're actually pretty extroverted and able to get along with anyone. Lauren does seem like she is kind of a little bit walled off, and it does take some time for her to open up to people, and as much as I relate a lot to that, it's not a good quality to have going into to a game like this. I don't think that bodes well.
Frankly, if I had to make a comparison, and this is going to sound like it's hard to come up with a worse person to be compared to, I would say, entering a game of Survivor, but I could see her going out there and having like a Deb Eaton experience of like wishing she'd never even gone on the show.
Maybe not quite so far as Deb.
We're not leaving the personal stuff out of this, Dom. It's not that kind of show.
Survivor isn't, or our show isn't?
Our show, we are nothing if not of the utmost purity when it comes to, leaving people's... We just want to stay cool with everyone on all sides.
Perfect. With Lauren, for as much as I would like to say that we'll get to know her and see what happens, I don't know if we'll get the time to do that. I do worry that she will be just kind of like the initial outcast and never be able to get any traction.
Right. She makes it sound like she's there for the experience, and I'm not sure that's going to be a fun situation for her.
She strikes me as the type who, the moment she walked into casting, Jeff Probst just fell in love with her. It's like, yeah, she's a perfect blue-collar American, and we need to get someone like her on the show. And I think it's worthwhile having the range of life experiences that someone like Lauren can bring to the table. But in terms of their position in the game, it doesn't look good right now.
Right. And to me, frankly, like, I've always had almost an issue with, like, I don't think it's good for the show or, frankly, like, fair to the people that I'm forecasting Lauren to be like. I don't think it's fair to the Deb Eatons to do that to. Everyone should recognize this isn't gonna go well. We shouldn't do this. They're not gonna gain much from this experience, and we're probably not gonna gain much from it either. I am always an advocate for put out people that you think have a realistic chance of winning.
Well, Deb, I think, went in there with like unresolved issues that were brought out by being sent out the way she was. Lauren seems, I mean, grounded enough that that wouldn't be an issue. So when she was talking with Wiggler, I think he asked her something to the effect of, what would it mean for you to be the first one out? And she said, well, it would obviously suck for all the reasons that you would expect. And also, like, she's a commercial fisherwoman, so she's leaving to film this season at the time which is usually the most important or most profitable for her career. So she is making a big sacrifice to be there, and so it would suck for that to not get paid off in any capacity. But it doesn't seem like going out first or whatever would ruin her life the way that it generally did seem to for Deb.
Yeah. Well, so, what do you think the chances are? What percentage chance would you assign, roughly, that Lauren makes the merge?
I think it's low, but it's a type of, like, if she does make the merge, you're not voting her out unless she's the only name left on your list, right?
Yeah, no, totally. Once she's at the merge, pencil her in for final five. But I would say Lauren, out of this whole cast, has the lowest percentage shot of making the merge.
Okay. I hope that you're wrong, because I do like Lauren. I would like to see her type do well more so than just someone like Cole or Devin, who you expect to make the merge every single time, and if they don't, then something must have gone drastically wrong. But yeah, based on certainly what she says about herself in terms of what could be an issue of, yeah, I'm hard-headed, I'm set in my ways, and you've got to be flexible, and I'm very stubborn, that's not great. the signs are not there.
oh boy. Yeah, so I mean, and listen, I also hope that I'm wrong. I'm wishing nothing but the best for Lauren to go out there.
Sure,
and,
you and are. Go out, sure,
okay,
you
Dom. All right.
No. I see what no.
Okay, let's go back into the hat. Here we go with, oh boy, Simone time. Excited for this one, too. Dom, you lead it off here. Simone, 25, diversity advocate in New York City. Where are you on Simone?
Simone is absolutely drawing dead, and I hope she is there for a long time, because she will make people upset. And if there's any kind of Twitter controversy or angry Reddit threads coming out of the season, it's probably going to relate to Simone in some way. So I hope that she is there bringing the fire for quite a while. And if she's there for long enough, it will become Simone's brutal cast assessment, I think, going forward. You know, she will be the new like iconic figure for that kind of stuff, because it feels like she's trying too hard, and she definitely is, but I don't know, it's still kind of entertaining regardless. And
yeah,
like, in a way which is like, I would never want to have to work with Simone or meet her in real life, but in terms of someone who is just on my TV to bitch about people, then I she's good at that. So
right. I know I said about Lauren, put only people out there, or put as many as you can out there that have a good chance of winning. If you're going to put out people that don't have a very good chance of winning, make it Simone. I love Simone, and I think she's going to be really, really fun this season. Like you, I hope she's there for a really long time. She reminds me a lot of one of my favorites back when we podcasted her original season, RC from Survivor Philippines. I feel like I'm getting a very similar vibe from Simone, and I love having that on Survivor. I think Simone's going to be awesome.
Yeah, Simone is your official Colin Stone something or other memorial of the season. Like, she's your pick. She's your ride or die.
She said, like, to be clear, I don't think this is gonna end well for her within the game, but I am definitely team Simone as far as like rooting interest. I think she's gonna be awesome on the show. Like, she's gonna be really fun in confessionals. I think she's gonna hopefully be out there really mixing it up within the game. I definitely don't see her just like sitting idly by being just waiting to be told what to do. I know she's actually, in order to gain a competitive advantage in our draft, Dom, because they were so successful on Millennials versus Gen X, I drafted all the Wigglets again, all the people that knew Josh Wiggler right away when they were interviewing him, or when he was interviewing them, I should say. Simone was one of those people. She knew Josh Wiggler.
Okay, and yet?
And yet she's going to go out there and kill it, and nothing else is ever going to happen. She's going to be the winner of Survivor. Yeah, no, I guess Simone is my ride or die now. I did, like, yesterday, this time, or maybe just recently, I've seen people actually talking about Simone on Twitter being a serious winner pick for them, and I was actually somewhat surprised by that.
That strikes me as wishful thinking in the extreme. Like, I would love to imagine the universe where that's possible, but it's not this one. I don't think.
Dom, we just saw Josh win Big Brother 19, Cody win America's Favorite Player, Donald Trump is president of the United States. Much crazier things have happened than Simone winning Survivor. Take back everything I've said already. Here's my winner pick, Simone.
Is she more or less likely than Ken, would you say?
Way more likely than Ken. Like, Ken, okay. Well, I don't okay. want, we're not going there. We're not doing this right now. We're already like two hours in this podcast.
Respect the season. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, I hope that Simone is long enough to, is there for long enough to give us more of the same, but it's, I can imagine people out there, like, obviously she's not going to say this to their faces, but they get the vibe that she's giving off, and I don't expect them to like it very much, although yeah. We'll see.
Well,
this,
she's on the right tribe, I think, for her.
Yeah.
I think this is definitely going to be the most fun tribe to watch.
Yeah, this Hustlers tribe, or Yawa, I believe it's called, this has the potential to be one of the all-time great tribes, I think. This could be a complete clusterfuck.
I'm going
to
spring the annual trivia question on you early, unanticipated, Dom. What was the merge tribe name last season? Stop looking at your keyboard and your other screen. There's no hands up here. What was the merge tribe name on Survivor Game Changers?
I don't know. No one knows that. Well, why do you talk to that?
I tried to think of it myself the other day. I haven't even looked it up to confirm. It took me hours of thinking on it, not just sitting there thinking about it. I was doing other stuff too, but it came to me a couple hours after I was trying to remember. I think it was Maku Maku or some similar portmanteau of the early tribe names.
My guess, if you had a gun to my head, was going to be Mananuku, just because, of course,
That might be it. It's something like that, yeah.
But Maku Maku sounds in the right ballpark, certainly.
Something equally just lazy and abhorrent. Anyway, any other thoughts on Simone for now?
It is hilarious that she's a diversity advocate, because her idea of diversity strikes me as like very superficial in that, okay, we're going to have better representation, but in terms of like actual personality diversity or anything like that, she is just not open to that whatsoever. It's basically people of all different races and backgrounds who look and act exactly like me.
Who agree with me, yeah. We want as many of them as possible checking off all the boxes in our corner. Yeah. All right, we will move on. Next item out of the hat, we have Allie. Allie, 24-year-old Allie, the YouTube star personal assistant. And I want to start here. I've already referenced this offhand a couple of times, and I imagine most people are aware of this, but some may not be. Allie and Patrick, who we haven't talked about, but who is also on this six-person tribe, know each other in real life, like are both from Arkansas or Alabama or somewhere in the South, and went to like the same college or something and hung out in the same friend
group. They both went to Auburn, I believe.
Okay, so Alabama, and hung out in the same friend group. Isn't that crazy? And how does that happen? I guess production doesn't go through and say who are all of your friends, but it seems like if they know they both went to Auburn, how do you miss this? Aren't they Facebook friends or something?
Well, surely there must be a question in casting of, do you recognize any of the other people who are in your like final 30 or whatever?
But yeah. Isn't the answer to that question no every single time, no matter if you do or not?
Well, it is no, but let's say they ask Patrick that and he says yes, and I know Allie, and then she said no. Do they just, like, kick her out for lying to them? Because that creates an interesting, like, prisoner's dilemma, but
weird prisoner's dilemma. That's like, exactly right. You want to rat them out to get the spot on the season because you're the one who's being casting's puppet.
Yeah, it tilts me to no end when people say, oh, this is a prisoner's dilemma when it isn't, so I always am gun-shy about
Same with the Monty Hall problem as well.
Yeah. But it's a similar principle of like, okay, let's say you know that they will not look kindly of you if you say, if you lie about this, do you actually tell the truth then? Because you have to know, okay, if they know about this, they're not going to put us out there together. It's going to be one or the other. And if you think that person is more appealing to casting or fills a niche in the cast for some way, I think you just have to lie about it and take your chances.
I honestly feel like if I was deep in the Survivor casting process and I saw someone I knew on like a personal basis and had hung out with before, and it didn't seem like casting was onto that, I think I would tell them. I don't think I would want it to go out there and be a thing that got sprung on them at the last minute, because I think their expectation would be, of course you would tell us if you knew someone out that we didn't know you knew.
Yeah, that sounds like the kind of thing that gets you blackballed from casting if you don't tell them.
Exactly. So I think that's something. Don't listen to Dom. Err on the side of caution. Be responsible. Rat out your friend.
But let's actually get into this, because, okay, they know each other, but what does that actually mean? It sounds like they weren't best of friends, they weren't talking to each other every single day, but also it was more than just, oh, I've seen you around campus a few times. It was like they're kind of on the periphery of the same friendship group, and maybe it's the kind of thing where, like, okay, they have each other on Facebook, and if they ran into each other again in real life, then they would talk and catch up quickly, but if this hadn't happened, they maybe never would have spoken again, right? There's right. No effort to reconnect like that.
No, but when you do find yourself out there on a six-person tribe on Survivor with, let's roll through who these other four people are on this tribe. We have, of course, G.Otis Simone. We have Surfer Devin. We have Fisherman Lauren and Bellhop Ryan. You're telling me these two aren't going to come together and be the core of whatever majority emerges?
Yeah, they might end up as just like the Malcolm and Denise thing, just by default, right?
Yes, exactly.
Even if they'd never met each other before, just by virtue of who the other people are, right? That's a pretty likely scenario.
That's exactly right. Yeah, but let's get into, I guess, Allie in general. It remains to be seen how them knowing each other in real life will affect the game. I'm sure it will come up. I'm sure they will feel like, hey, that was cool that we used to hang out, and now we're here on this beach together. But I think you're right. Whether they knew each other or not, these would be my two picked. If I didn't know that they knew each other, I would say these two will come together and be the center of whatever happens here, because Allie and Patrick seem to be the ones who are going to be able to choose who joins up with them. But let's get into just Allie in general here.
Well,
okay.
So just on that, I was going to say, I don't think it changes anything fundamentally. So if they can work together, that's great. And the fact that they know each other obviously makes that more likely, gives them something they can start the game with. But if it turns into, oh, it looks like I'm on the outs and the one way for me to survive is to throw Patrick under the bus or vice versa, I don't think she's going to have any hesitation in doing that.
Totally.
Like, there's no like outside the game claim to her loyalty that's going to affect how she plays.
Right. I'm 100% with that. That should definitely, I don't think they will address it on the show unless it becomes like a major plot point of some vote or whatever, but I would guess they will do everything they can to avoid bringing it up that they just happen to know each other in real life. I don't think that's what they want. They want for the audience to be seeing like behind the scenes that far. So let's get into Allie just in general. I know we've talked, I've mentioned that the rest of the people on this tribe may seem to be just worse by default, and so anyone out there just slightly below average would be in an incredible spot here. And I think Allie is that person, but I'm not trying to say I think she's slightly below average. I think she just meets that qualification of not being actively bad. But how good do you actually think she could be here, Dom?
Well, so it didn't start off well for me. When I heard that she was a celebrity assistant, I thought, okay, I don't know about that. When I heard that she was a celebrity assistant to a YouTube sensation, I thought, okay, this is not going to work. Like, I already know who's at the bottom of my board. But after watching her interviews, reading her pregame bio, she was high enough for me to become a first-round draft pick. And maybe this is just me. This is my equivalent of what you do every season. Like, maybe I finally just, like, taken to Allie or something. But no, she seemed really good to me. She seemed very aware of what other people were thinking, how they perceive her, how she perceives them, and how to work with all of that. She seems kind of engaging and interesting, but not in this over-the-top way that's going to distract people or make anyone jealous or anything like that. And based on what everyone else was saying about her in those brief segments, it seems like they agree. It seems like everyone else kind of likes the vibe that she's putting out there.
Yeah, I took Rourke number one overall, and then you took Allie and Desi in the first round, and those would have probably been my next two picks, even knowing how much we value own ourselves on these younger women in these drafts for whatever reason. I'm totally with you. It definitely seems like Allie has a great kind of recipe going for her for success on Survivor, just personality-wise. And also, she's a big fan of the show. I thought it was actually interesting. Her uncle was an alternate to be on one of the seasons.
Yeah.
That's cool. I definitely think everything is there for Allie to go on to be successful here. And it sounds like everyone just at pregame Ponderosa is liking just her general vibe. I think Allie is definitely, while I picked Rourke number one overall, that was largely because I thought she would be the least likely to fall back to me. I think Allie, Desi, and Rourke are just my very clear top three in some order, and I think it's by a pretty wide margin.
Yeah, I don't have any real confidence that I like. This doesn't strike me as a cast where one person is so clearly above the rest, like a Kim in One World kind of situation, where like we were just competing to see who would get the first pick,
yeah.
Then, and whoever did was going to take Kim. This time, I could be completely wrong about Ali, but I think she has a lot of promise, and she said in her bio that she wants to play like Sandra, which normally we would have some strong words about, but if it's game changer Sandra, then I'm all for it, frankly.
Yeah.
So
she's already got the pre-gaming down, so this is perfect if it's game changer Sandra.
Yeah, we'll see what she actually means by that.
Yeah. Definitely really looking forward to Allie out there. Let's move on now. Only two names left in the hat. We are going to Allie's BFF, Patrick, who also an Auburn alum, apparently, according to Dom. 25, he is a moving company owner and works for his own moving company. Dom, it's day -3 out here, and this guy is already burnt to a crisp. How is he not getting medevaced in the first week?
Yeah, well, if you think back to that amazing, iconic confessional that Brenda had in Karamaro about Cochran looking like a tomato, whatever, it's all
AKA
the same.
AKA Brenda's one confessional in Karamoan.
That's why it was iconic, yeah. I think Patrick is in for maybe an even worse fate, but if he can survive those extra tribulations, I don't know. I like Patrick. I like what he's putting out there.
Yeah, I think this is going to sound so weird, especially because I'm from New England, but like, I think if Patrick looked exactly like he does and brought everything to the table that he does, but was from like Massachusetts and had like an annoying accent and was kind of like cocky, I think he would be in rough shape. I think being that kind of like lower key Southern guy actually really puts him in a great spot here. I think Patrick, along with Cole, are two of the two guys that I would say have the highest upside for me this season.
Yeah, his issue is that everyone else in the cast at this point seem to think he is that asshole, because you read the comments about him and it's all like, oh, this guy seems really arrogant, or I don't have high hopes for him. So hopefully he's able to win them over. And in his interviews, when you listen to his kind of soft Alabama drawl, he is actually very charming. When you get past that initial image of him just looking the way he does, and you think, actually, he's a pretty nice guy. He seems like he knows his stuff. He's not going to be driving too many people insane. He's going to be able to just get along with people and do his thing.
No, he looks like Scott Tenorman from South Park.
He really does.
I just did the math on that. But, yeah, no, I'm actually really, I think, I said this about someone earlier, about I think people are judging him, but then once they meet him and hear how he is in conversation and see that he's a more laid back guy, they'll say to themselves, oh, I was way wrong about this guy. And he'll get more credit than he maybe otherwise would have.
Yeah. So in that regard, do you think he's a high variance pick, or is that something which you expect to happen consistently, that people can get over that initial impression that they might have of him?
I expect that to happen consistently. I know I've mentioned those three, Rourke, Allie, and Desi being are both of our top three, I think, in our boards. After they were gone and I had the next two picks, I took Patrick next along with Cole in my next set of picks. I really think both of them, especially out of the guys, are two of the safer picks for me. I think I would actually qualify Patrick as among the lower variance candidates for me this season. I think he's one of the safest people to not be the hashtag first one out. Yeah. So I definitely think Patrick has a lot of upside there. I'm not going to put it in, like, I'm not going to say JT Token Sheen's upside or go crazy like that. That wouldn't be anything like me. So any other thoughts on Patrick?
So Ali did say that if the time comes when she does have to turn on Patrick, then she can use their pregame relationship to her advantage. She can say, oh, I actually knew this guy, and I'm sure she can spin it so that it's like, oh, I heard these really bad rumors about him, or everyone on campus said he was a dick, or something like that. I'm sure she can, if she's willing to throw him under the bus, she can probably do it, and she seems more willing to do that to him than he might be to her, so... Yeah.
That is hysterical. I'd never thought about that angle of like when people know each other outside the game. We should have thought of this with Zeke and Andrea last season.
Yeah.
They would just drag each other to the rest of the tribe.
Yeah, just like, oh, one of my friends dated him for a few months and said he was an ass. Or just look, there are so many ways that she could just destroy his reputation in the eyes of everyone else out there.
Yeah. So that should be really, really exciting stuff. Now I can't wait for that. All right. Dom, our final player of the season, Bellhop Ryan here, 23, certainly getting a lot of love on just social media and from the Survivor promo team. I understand why. This guy seems fun. He seems, I know we talked about Mike the urologist potentially being in that David Wright kind of Cochran mold. I really do feel like Ryan is also out here because John Cochran was successful. I don't know if he would have made it onto the show had it not been for Cochran.
Are we saving the best for last unintentionally with Ryan here, or do you think that he can't live up to that example?
I have real concerns about Ryan.
Okay.
Because just to put it in the same, like we've said about Joe may have to pay for Tony and Russell the way Cameron paid for Ian and Steve. I feel like Ryan may have to be in kind of cast under that same umbrella of people will presumably look at him, and if they know anything about Survivor, Cochran will come to mind. As whether it's fair or unfair towards Ryan, that's why, like, he's on the show because of Cochran, so it's fair. Like, he wouldn't, I don't think he would be on the show, but he also has to deal with that of people knowing that. It, certainly recently, this has been one of the most dangerous types of players within the game. Furthermore, to Edgick first one out a little bit, and this is completely unfounded, and I'm mostly kidding, but it also wouldn't surprise me. There were, in the first episode, just two very offhand and unnecessary references, one to Cochran, one to the Savai'i tribe. And I feel like Josh, of course, knows who the first one out is, and will, when we listen back to first one out again, there will be things that stand out of, like, in retrospect, this will make a lot more sense. Ryan is the only name I could come up with in trying to edgic first one out.
You think he has the loser's edit?
Right. No, and that's to be clear, I'm 98% kidding, but it did cross my mind when I heard both of those things very in close succession that, oh, maybe those are, like, little subtle hints about who it's going to be. But I don't know. Ryan, I've said this about a lot of people, like, not many people would surprise me if they were the first one out in this cast, and Ryan is certainly
okay,
not one of them.
Well, my more reality-based concern about
good.
Ryan
Please
is that
give a reality-based take, because this podcast needs it.
Is that he seems incredibly wolfy, even when he's not trying to be. Like, he seems, you listen to him talking to Wiggler, he seems great, but I don't know if people will give him the time of day that they will need to understand that. And I worry that he will be instantly typecast as the wannabe Cochran and just get ousted quickly. Like, I don't see, for instance, Simone taking a shine to him, although maybe the rest of the tribe will not take a shine to Simone. I can quite easily see that happening too.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, I would have said after Ian Terry won Big Brother, hey, forget it, future. You know, as soon as I saw Steve, I was like, forget it. You look too much like Ian. They're never going to fall for that again. And then Steve goes on to win Big Brother. Is it the craziest thing in the world that, hey, even though we've seen Cochran go on to be not only a winner, but also now he's on, he's the reward for Debbie. Like, he's this franchise player. Could Brian still be successful in that? Or because I really wonder if that's going to be possible.
I guess you could argue that Steve was a straw that broke the camel's back in that regard, and that anyone else has very good reason to be wary of these types if they're at all familiar with Survivor or Big Brother.
Yeah.
But I like you say, on this tribe, if there's an early movement against Lauren or Simone or someone else instead, and Ryan does get that time to just adjust and settle in, then I think that then he could be fine. And I think there's more chance for him to do that on this tribe than there would be if you parachuted him into the healers, let's say.
Right. I think that's actually a really good point. We said this about Simone, about, like, this is the tribe to be on. If you're Simone, like, this is the starting tribe. I think it's good that these people that I would say, like, I frankly feel like Devin, Lauren, Ryan, and Simone were all pretty near the bottom of my draft board as far as, like, winner candidates were concerned. I feel like they would all generally, on more balanced and bit larger tribes, have a better chance of being the first one out. But when they're all together, they can't all be the first one gone. Like, a couple of them have to end up in the majority. I think it's great that they all get a chance to fight and have other people they can realistically point to and hope to get voted out over them. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And we should definitely talk about I can't imagine you're ruling Ryan out after having seen how it's gone for Ian and Steve and Cochran.
No, I like him, and he is aware of that barrier that he has to face and what he needs to do, at least on an abstract level, to get around that. So
yeah.
I have high hopes for Ryan, and I really hope he gets to fulfill them, because I like him a lot. I like, obviously, we get criticized sometimes for being too all in on that type of player, but I don't know. I like him. I can't help myself.
Yeah, no, I definitely do like Ryan as well, and I'm very, very interested to see how he does on the show. I think he could be really, really fun. Like, if he does go in there and go deep, lock it in that he's going to be, like, a really fun big character.
Yeah, he Jeff was already complaining that he couldn't call him by his last name. So for those of you who hated that, the signs are not good.
Well, the worst thing I think Ryan could ask for is to go in there and be called by his last name. I don't think he wants to actively conjure up memories of Cochran.
He doesn't want to, especially as Jeff seems to be mispronouncing it constantly.
What is his last name?
So, oh God, it's either Ulrich or Ulrich, and I think it's Ulrich. I think it's a soft CH, but okay. I don't know. This might be like the GIF versus GIF thing where I am correct and you're wrong, but everyone else disagrees with me.
We don't care about that debate anymore. Hashtag never cared about GIF versus GIF unless you want to be accurate about it. But anyway, so Ryan, as I've mentioned, he's certainly been all over. It seems to me like the promotional material, and that's also why I feel like he might be a higher likelihood person to be the first boot, because they know he's going to have like a big fun arc in the first episode.
I think a lot of people in the superfan community, even the ones who initially were sympathetic to the Cochran and Spencer types, are now so like over that. They've had so much of it that there's already this backlash against Ryan that he's going to be the next like over promoted superfan and is going to be talking endlessly about, you know, how awkward he is or how much of a fan he is, and they're just not in for it. Yeah. I don't know. I think the show might try to do that to him, but if they do, that's not going to be his fault necessarily. It's going to be the show doing what the show's done for years now.
Yeah, no, I definitely am with that. Dom, that's it for the 18 contestants on the show. We have a couple other things to quickly get to. First, a question from the one true Australian king, Adam Ritter. He wants to know, who has the biggest goat potential out of this group? Like, to be in there deep and just losing and making a big deal out of themselves. Anyone standing out to you?
It is obviously Simone, right? Like, could it be anyone other than Simone?
I'm scrolling through the list. I mean, Joe, I guess, if he does get people on his side, and then...
I could see Lauren in the sense of people just not really connecting with her and not feeling a reason to vote for her, but I don't think she's going to be actively hated the way I could see Simone being if things go her way.
Okay, yeah, I think Simone would... I'm willing to go with you on Simone being the answer to that question. One other thing that we definitely should bring up, Dom, a new game design twist. This is, of course, announced quite a while ago from the great Redmond over at InsideSurvivor.com broke this story. Final Four now. We are going to play an immunity challenge, and that winner is not only immune themselves, they just get to pick one of the other three people to bring with them to the final three. The other two people remaining do a fire challenge for that last spot in the finals. What is your big takeaway from this right away, having not seen this play out yet?
So my take is, this is potentially more game-breaking than almost any other twist that they've instituted into the show. Even the final three, which I think has caused a massive change in how people play the game and how the end game plays out. Ultimately, it's not a kind of categorical difference the way that this seems to be. And I worry that this, if it goes wrong, could remove a lot of what matters and what should matter about how the game plays out in those late stages.
Yeah, it's really interesting because just thinking about how it's going to play out, there's no vote, essentially, at Final Four. You can't guarantee that the target leaves. They will always at least get a chance to play for their spot in the fire challenge, even if they lose the immunity challenge. Now, I'm willing to... I think this adds a ton of really interesting layers if the players know about it up front. I think it could be critical if they are sitting there having to deal with... make a lot of deals, I guess, in, okay, if you win, you take me. If I win, I take you. And, like, navigating oneself into a position where multiple people are taking you, it becomes, like, a very big key to the game. I think there are a lot of potentially really interesting strategic elements to this. That said, I really, not having seen it played out, it just feels so, maybe unnatural is the wrong word, but it just feels like a needlessly almost, like, not broken, but just totally different from all of the other rounds of Survivor, and at such a critical stage in the game, I just don't know if I can sign off on that yet. Now, maybe I'll get to be results oriented, and years from now we'll talk about what a great idea this was. But when it comes to solving the issue of deserving people getting taken out before the finals, this seems to be yet another attempt to fix that, and it really seems to me like it's going to take no time for the people to figure out how to play around that. They're just going to go out at Final Five now. What do you want?
Yeah, I will be livid if this is a surprise that is sprung on them at Final Four, and even if it doesn't end up affecting how the season would have played out, but especially if there's someone who should have been voted out of Final Four but gets a new lease of life thanks to this twist and ends up like winning the Fire Challenge, making the Final Three, and not stealing the win away necessarily, but winning when they would not have done otherwise. Like, that's going to really taint the season in my eyes, even if I like that person. So let's think about what the consequences could be of this, though, because so the thing that stands out to me is there's no way for you as someone who let's say is in the majority alliance to actually guarantee that someone doesn't make the Final Three if they're in the Final Four with you, because even if you win immunity, even if you know who you want to take with you, that person gets to compete in a Fire Challenge, and if they win, they're in. So if you want to take them out, you have to do it before Final Four, which, as you say, just like the Final Three has meant most of the would have won people go out at Final Four instead of Final Three, this is going to mean most of those people go out at Final Five instead of Final Four. Now, it does mean that if you're Michelle, if you're Mike Holloway, if you're someone who needs to win your way to the end, then potentially you only need to win one fewer challenge to do that, especially if you're good at Fire. And that's actually going to be very relevant now. You know, we hear about these people who go 38 days without making Fire, right?
Yeah, it's unfathomable. How do you do that? To not just do it every so often when you know that that could come up, or just that the Fire person could be. We saw this on Australian Survivor. It was like day 15 or whatever. They vote out the guy who takes care of the Fire. There are 8 people on the beach and none of them know how to make a Fire.
Right, but normally we speak about that as, oh, that's probably unwise if you have to survive out there where you need a Fire. But now it actually has severe in-game consequences, and that's part of the reason why, like, if they don't tell them up front, you could get to day 38 and one person who has never made a Fire before and gets to go against someone who maybe hasn't either, but they get a little bit more practice of it. And it ends up as like a Becky versus Sandra thing, except this time, maybe it's someone who actually is the big jury threat just sneaking into the finals and stealing the $1 million away.
Yeah, and it just does feel, I'm sure they'll make like a big dramatic spectacle out of it, but it feels so weird to have, especially like, this will be in the finale, obviously. This vote will be deep enough into the game that this will take place in the finale. Maybe they felt like not only does this solve the problem of more people bubbling than they feel like should from the finals that they think should like deserve to have a chance there, but I think they may feel like the finales have recently had these kind of like weird votes, in like, for instance, the final six in both Cambodia and in Game Changers had these big like spectacle tribal councils, and I think they might like the idea of like this spectacle Fire only tribal council.
I think they love the idea of the last in-game tribal always having this element of suspense to it, where you know something big is going to happen, because so often it comes down to the Final Four and there's one person who clearly, if they make the finals, is going to win. That person doesn't win immunity and they just get voted out, or more often the biggest jury threat just wins the final immunity and now there's no suspense to any of it anymore and it doesn't even matter who goes instead. So this is their attempt to jazz it up a bit. I do think one interesting outcome would be is, so we've complained in the past that when you have a Final Three, it's so easy for three people to band together at the top of this alliance and then just run the game and then just chop off the other people as they get closer to the end. And the obvious solution to that is to just have a Final Two, as people have been clamoring for this whole time. But this might actually address that concern insofar as, let's say it's to use the example we always use, let's say it's Kim, Chelsea, and Sabrina. If you're Sabrina, you have to think, okay, Chelsea is going to pick Kim as the one person I'm taking with me. Kim's going to pick Chelsea. I, as the third wheel in that group, now have to fight for survival. So maybe I need to mix things up a little bit earlier and try and shake the game up. And equally, we could also see, let's say I win immunity, or it looks like I'm going to win immunity, but I think that I'm the best person of our three at keeping that fourth person out of the finals with us. I might throw it, ask to be sent into the fire challenge, because I know if that person makes it, then it's all over regardless, and I'm the best person to knock them out. Or
right.
you could even have something like, I know that I can't beat the people that I'm going with. However, if I win the fire challenge, that's an extra thing that I can add to my survivor resume. And I hate that that's a term now, but it is. That's something I can add to my resume, and that's going to up my chances of beating them. Or like if the jury is going to resent those people for not taking me with them, if they're going to think, oh, I'm now a sympathetic figure for having to win the fire challenge, then I might want to go in the fire challenge so that when I win, I'm now higher in the jury's esteem. So
you
have these other layers to it, which I think could be interesting.
Right. Well, I think the interesting one, because I've always said, be really good at fire because that's the final four tiebreaker. And if you can assure that you win the tiebreaker, you essentially have a majority with two votes. In this situation, there could be some weird dynamics where, like, it's a 3-on-1, like it's a Jeremy, Tasha, and Spencer versus Kelly Wentworth, but Wentworth is really good at fire, and only one of the other three is really good at fire. Like, if you specifically don't go in to do this fire against Kelly Wentworth, all of us are going to lose, so you have to throw the immunity and have her lose the immunity, like, otherwise we're all done. It could be really interesting where, like, throwing the immunity challenge becomes the key to winning the game. Hashtag always be throwing.
Yeah, so... so yeah, that those end game decisions now have a lot more importance to them, which I do like a lot. So I'm not shutting this down immediately, but I do think there is like an obvious like worst case scenario here that could very easily be realized on this season.
Right, and I want to reiterate what you said early on, which is if they don't tell them about this up front, whether or not it makes a difference or not, I'm going to be livid, because they should absolutely get to know about this kind of format shift when it's going to be such a big hashtag game changer. I've been using a lot of hashtags this week. Dom, one other thing, I guess, that I want to bring up just in our preview podcast, just so maybe years from now this does or does not come in. I know at the Game Changers finale, we found out the rules about what would happen if there was a tie at Final Tribal Council, and a lot of people said, oh, that must mean there's a tie coming at season 35. I said, no, they just realized that it would have been a tie if it was between Brad and Ty Trang in the finals, and they officially declared, like, then, okay, this is what would have happened. We now have word from Probst, like, his hype for the season is, this will have one of the most interesting endings ever. I'm getting back on board with the idea that this will be a tie vote at the end of the season.
Yeah, is this as obvious to you as, oh, they invited these seven people onto the stage at the Millennials versus Gen X finale, therefore, what does this mean for Game Changers? Is it that level of divination for you, or what?
I will never stop educating the previous season's finale. That's all you need to see about what's going to happen for the following season. No, I think it's interesting. Like, obviously, this could not come in. We've never had a tie before in the history of Final Tribal Council. But I do think we're now, the evidence is mounting that this could be a tie. I think it's an interesting potential couple of things that might tie together from Jeff Probst. Because, like, frankly, the most reliable, like, what's going to happen next is from interviews with Jeff Probst. And that's why I avoid them at all costs. But I saw that just as a headline on Twitter.
Yeah. Let's talk about editing more generally, though, because one of the big pieces of feedback that we've received, especially since Millennials versus Gen X, is we're focusing too much on like the minutiae of editing discussions to a point where it crowds out a lot of the more interesting stuff that's going on. And a lot of the strategic discussion that used to be like the defining point of our show, and we are taking that on board. And so for this season, we know that there are lots of people who also do like that stuff and want to hear about it, so we're going to try to strike a better balance between those two things. And maybe it's going to be having the editing stuff kind of sandboxed in its own segment towards the end, where it's still in a lot of detail, but people who don't like that stuff can kind of tune out for it and enjoy the rest of the show. Or we're going to find some way to redress that balance, because I know one thing that I've noticed we've been dropping a lot is those discussions we used to have of, oh, this person is on the bottom, or this person isn't relevant to the game right now, but what could happen in a few weeks to where they're going to become important again?
Right.
And sometimes those are the most fun discussions to have. So hopefully we can incorporate more of those this time around and have the editing still around in the discussion to some degree, but in a kind of better balance.
Yeah, well, speaking of editing in a better balance, watch Australian Survivor and tell me that they can't be doing a better job balancing this edit as far as not making it clear by episode 3 who's going to be in the finals.
Well, okay, here's a hot take for our Australian Survivor podcast that at least one of us will be recording sometime in the near future. I actually don't think they're doing a great job of balancing the editing this time around. But
who's
we
the lock
can get
winner,
into that.
Dom? Give me the lock winner.
There's not a lock winner, but that's not... look, we're not going to have this discussion.
Who are you ruling
right
out?
Now.
Who can't win on Survivor? On Australian Survivor? Who is drawing dead? Who cannot win? There's one name who cannot win, right?
Well, who do you think it is?
Tara cannot win. Everyone else is... It would not surprise me if anyone else won.
I wouldn't even agree with that. So maybe actually I'm proving your point that it is good and I'm just talking out of my ass.
Thank
but...
you.
Okay, we'll save that for his own podcast. But okay. In terms of this, is there anything else we want to get to before we wrap this up?
No, I'm excited for season 35 to get here. Again, I am so fucking glad for Big Brother to just be over and for finally we can focus our attention on something interesting.
I mean, even when we were not ourselves podcasting about it or really paying much attention to it, just the fact that everyone else was and that they were complaining about it and that we felt kind of obligated to be in its orbit was just so, it was so exhausting for us. I can't imagine how it felt for like the live feed correspondents who actually had to podcast about it every single day.
Yeah.
Like that's, at that point, that's a chore. That's a job that you don't like going to, as opposed to, you know, something that you really enjoy.
Well, I mean,
so.
That's why they got a robot to do it in Taryn Armstrong. They couldn't find a human, so they got Taryn.
Of course. And however you would classify the others, I suppose. But yeah, I'm glad that's out of the way. Obviously glad to be back with you podcasting about Survivor this season. And we will continue the broad range of topics that we've been podcasting about both together and separately over the past few weeks, over the course of the next few months, I'm hoping too.
Yeah. No, this has been a lot of fun. I'm sure a lot more podcasting coming very soon as we have the premiere coming Wednesday. We will definitely be diving back into BB7 very soon and continuing that every week. For if you would, once again, like more information on the Patreon page, it's just patreon.com/DomandColin. Until the premiere, I guess, it will be at DomHRV on Twitter for Dom. I am still at Colin Stone. DomandColin@gmail.com if you want to email us questions about Survivor or whatever, takes on the premiere, anything that you want us to talk about, any ideas for podcasts that you would, podcast ideas you would like us to discuss, definitely open to anything along those lines. Dom, anything else before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I'm done.
Alrighty. Well, I suppose that will do it. Take care, everybody.